the menorah and Kwanzaa stuff too. A suit has been filed by the ACLU. If you should display it, you bet we will sue. If you were PC, then we might be okay. Could Mary be played by an Asian who's gay? We think that this Joseph should be Josephine. Why couldn't the three kings be three Swiss drag queens? Should try a differently abled small person who's by. We've one more request, though you might think it strange. The cattle and sheep simply must be free range. We're not anti-virgin, but this suit you'll lose. We'll file to defend Mary's right to choose. And one day your children will have the Lord's care. 'Cause once you're in heaven, no lawyers live there.
Through the store with some presents left to buy. Credit charges soar, climbing way too high. Each charge makes me wince. My debt has reached new height. I dread every statement since my bills are out of sight. Oh, juggle bills after Christmas Day. My left arm gets very numb as I ponder how to pay. Juggle bills, I must find a way. How much would my kidney fetch if I sold it on eBay? My payments all were late, a card came in the mail. A zero interest rate, wow, my arms began to flail. An idea did occur, I found a new technique. My balance I will now transfer to a new card every week. Oh, juggle bills, it's like Christmas Day. When I get the mail and find more credit cards each day. Juggle bills, I won't have to pay. Since I get more credit cards in the mailbox every day.
And now a holiday tune from best-selling author Ann Coulter.
I'm scheming with the white Christians, so we'll control the GOP. Where tax rates we're cutting, welfare we're gutting to bring liberals to their knees. I'm teeming with more white Christians with each court nomination fight. One more judge and the High Court swings right. May they all be middle-aged and white.
From It was quite a year, but it does appear that our profits came up short.
It soon was clear then, with some input from his staff.
As the CEO, I could save some dough if I slash all jobs in half.
There must have been some magic in the plan that they devised. For when the numbers all were crunched, they began to scream,
downside!
Frosty, the chairman, was as pleased as he could be.
If our stocks get hot, I could buy a yacht and retire by 43.
Frosty, the chairman, said the profit still did lag. And so once again, he called his staff in to pull more tricks from their bag. They had a new plan that he launched without remorse.
Workers soon will flip when they get pink slips, saying your job's been outsourced.
He shut down the old factory.
I really have no choice. We need to cut more spending, plus I could use a new Rolls Royce.
Frosty, the chairman, he got fired the next day. Since his pay's too high, they will now get by
with the snowman from Bombay.
Watch out, I'm telling you why. The FAA doubts that Santa will fly. Santa Claus is coming by ground. His bags were too weird. They're posting his bonds. They're checking his beard. He's getting the wand. Santa isn't leaving the ground. He'd take a flight if he could. They thought his suit looked weird. Just because of his long beard. They'll post a reward, 'cause last time he flew, he tried to board his sleigh with shampoo. TSA does not like his ilk. He might bring on some cookies and milk.
And that was a number of numbers from Oh Christmas Bush, Capital Steps, one of their little kind of side albums. Capital Steps puts out an album every year, which I've complained is rather vanilla, but it's also, you know, it's got some satire. So in desperation, because I don't have any other hard left satire, I play that. But if anybody has something they want to pass on to me, hey, give me a call off air at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, or email me at rnorse3@hotmail.com, R-N-O-R-S-E, Norse3@hotmail.com. Anyway, you're tuned to 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org in Santa Cruz, California, and this is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. I'm eating an egg salad sandwich, so
if you hear the shells.
Yes, and we have in the studio some interlopers who are going to do a lot of creative interloping. The infamous city council candidate, the only one worth voting for, Steve Plaich, I believe it's properly pronounced.
All right. Very good.
And also with me, the radio journalist, free TV man, madcap protest monger, and panhandler extraordinaire, curb hugger.
Jesus,
Chris.
It gets longer every week.
Yeah, well, you got to give all your credentials.
Good evening, Santa Cruz.
And we also have you, if you want to call in. Phone lines are open, 831-427-3772, 427-3772. Now, I had announced on Indie Bay, and that's a good place to go to read stuff I write, and also to go to Santa Cruz Peace Camp website, where I occasionally post stuff about the Peace Camp that I'm told by all the hardworking Peace Campsters down there who are actually doing the Peace Camp and taking the tickets, whereas I sit back and simply write about it. But that's a place you can catch some updates from me and Linda LeMaster and Becky Johnson and others who are supportive of the Peace Camp, which is an effort to decriminalize sleeping in Santa Cruz, and which has been going on now since July 4th. So we're almost at the three-month level, getting closer to it. So that's, of course, where also people's cases are showing up in court. I believe, Chris, your case is coming up in court.
I've been there and done that, and I'm going back, yes. I think my next date will be sort of a pretrial conference on October 13th at 10 a.m., if anybody wanted to come over to the courthouse.
And your attorney is Ed Fry at the moment?
For the moment, but I'm deeply involved at the moment in examining my legal strategy. So
you're considering some sort of a Norse suicide gesture, like in my last case, where I tried to defend myself.
You know that I don't think of it in that terms. My goal would be to win, and I want to make that clear. My goal is not political, because I believe that I can be effective politically by beating this stupid lodging law, which, and I think Steve would agree, going all the way back to Jim Crow days, these sorts of lodging laws were used to keep them niggas moving along, you know, and so...
Why don't you explain to the people listening what do you mean by a lodging law, and how'd you get it, and what's that about?
Well, our research indicated while we were back at the county courthouse when they first announced their intention to use this 647E California Penal Code against us, our research indicated to us anyway quite soundly.
You were doing a protest against the sleeping ban, right?
We were protesting the sleeping ban. And as you mentioned, it still is in theory and very technically with Colette and Gary and all of them, as you said, still getting tickets, still going on. But when we were sort of in the meat of it, let's say when the numbers were really high and the whole thing was really quite exciting, lots of media attention. As you remember, I'd spend a good 10 hours a day giving interviews all around the world. It was quite an amazing moment. But everybody argued around the fact of whether or not sleeping was even legal in that county courthouse. But let's face it, we stumped two police agencies and two governments for 45 days. We remained untouched. So, and then all of a sudden, it became illegal, and the manner in which it did, rather than using the sleeping ban against us, which they actually threatened to do, the county did, use the city sleeping ban against us, they instead snuck out in the middle of the night and laid this, just out of the blue, laid this 647E penal code, California penal code. It's known as a lodging law, and our research indicates that these lodging laws, especially in California, have been in effect continuously since the Civil War days, and that they have evolved over time, but they were essentially put into place to, as I said at the beginning of the show, keep those niggas moving along. They were meant to keep freed and escaped slaves just not in their communities. And now it's just kind of ironic, I think viciously so, actually, that it would be whipped out to crush an otherwise legal protest on behalf of poor and street people in Santa Cruz. I think it's amazing. Obviously, I don't think that the sheriffs knew they were doing that. I think they were probably as astounded by our reaction, because it's commonly been used. We did find that it was used in Sacramento and Oakland to crush occupational protests. But in many cases, those protests were like against the war or abortion or something like that. So the people are like, well, what do they care? It's a lodging law. They get the charges dropped when the protest breaks up. Everybody's happy. They get to get arrested on the cameras, and everybody goes home. But in this case, they used it against people who were actually protesting the control and use of public space. So it fucking backfired in their face. We all stood up and went, okay, and we went like lemmings off a cliff. I literally was signing people up every night on a clipboard to get arrested for this charge. And that's how it went for several days, probably 5 days of continuing raids on Peace Camp 2010. And people literally just, we got YouTube video after YouTube. We got over 100 YouTube videos up, many of them on these raids and arrests, where you can go to peacecamp2010.blogspot.com. And from there, you can get there, as they say in Maine. And you'll get the YouTube channel and the Twitter and all that. But you can see a lot of media. I got several hundred pictures I took, although only 150 or so of them are up on the web. And it's just that's basically the story. So now we begin the process from the protests this summer. We begin the process of adjudicating these arrests. And apparently, at least so far, the county plans on actually prosecuting them, which, again, is highly unusual. Usually, in our research, has indicated most communities that have used this law this way tend to drop the charges.
So, Steve, you've been observing this process going down to Peace Camp 2010 every other night, going to city council candidate forums, because after all, you're a city council candidate, going to various court hearings that haven't yet happened really around Peace Camp 2010. And, you know, you've been chattering with me every so often.
I have, indeed.
In fact, you're doing so now.
My responsibility, my job as a city councilman is to make the whole city work. or to fix what doesn't work. In my opinion, sleeping bans, camping bans, singing bans simply don't work. They don't work as a practical matter, which is obvious, but they also don't work because they're in violation of the 1st, 4th, 5th, 8th, 14th Amendments, not the 4th, the 8th. And if you... what Ed Frye is attempting to do, also the Ninth Amendment. So they simply don't work. And my responsibility as city councilman is to make sure that things work in the city, and so that's why.
Yeah, but you're not a city councilman. You never will be a city councilman.
Hey,
you are simply marching around pretending to be. You're not pretending. You're in campaigning for city council without funding, without the backing of big organizations.
Well, that's Brian why we need to tell people endorsed this. This man needs contributions.
I think that even outside the council, which I may end up being, on November 3rd, I can still influence city
that's
policy.
That's right, mister.
And that's exactly what I'm attempting to do now, is to build a base through which I can influence city policy. And I think that that's going to be effective in the long run.
Absolutely.
We're now
I agree.
Past the summer season. We're now into the fall litigation season.
You
got it. Court.
And I do think that on a good set of facts, that the Ninth Amendment argument that Ed attempted to raise today could obtain. Now, I would have liked to have seen him been able to raise that argument, but appellate procedure, which none of us here formulated.
Well, you better explain what you're talking about, because you're referring to a court hearing that happened at 4 o'clock today around the issue of the sleeping ban. An elderly, well, he's not about the same age as I am, we're both kind of elderly.
I hope you're all right about that, because I ran into Robert last night at about 11 o'clock at night on my way to go sleep on the river bottom by the courthouse, and he was playing Hare Krishna songs.
Right, well, the guy may be a little confused, or maybe he's simply eclectic in his case.
Yes, indeed.
In any case, he went to court with Ed Frye before a 3-judge panel to try to overturn a decision by the redoubtable Kim Baskett, who's a wisdom we saw earlier this week in the Sing Song 2 case. And she, she found us guilty in the Sing Song 2 case. That's the case outside Bookshop Santa Cruz of singing on the sidewalk that wakens a day sleeper. And she also found Robert Facer guilty on a night when there admittedly was no legal shelter at the homeless service center. Even though there was no shelter, he was guilty of sleeping outside the shelter. Now, of course, he was injudicious enough to admit that he wouldn't have taken shelter if it were offered him. But that hardly negates the fact that there was no shelter to offer. And therefore, there was a clear necessity to sleep outside. Even if, had he had the option, and had he chosen then to sleep outside, there might not have been a necessity defense.
Yeah. Well, and I think...
3-judge panel found, of course, that there was no merit to this because of a number of reasons. I guess it sort of dismissed the arguments out of hand. What was your... Did you read the briefs involved in this?
I didn't read the opening brief, nor did I read Ed's reply brief. What I would have suggested to Ed, that had he known about...
Ed Frye, the attorney for Robert Facer.
Had he intended to raise any kind of a Ninth Amendment issue, and had he been aware of it, say, a week previous, he should have filed a letter brief with the court, which is common in federal court pleading. You sign a letter, file that with the court, make sure it gets to the judges, then he could have raised that issue.
The issue of the Ninth Amendment. That was, he tried to bring up the issue of, you know, the rights enumerated to the federal, or in this case the state and local governments by the Constitution, does not exclude other rights that are reserved to the people. That is to say that the rights, the fact that it's certain rights are enumerated does not exclude the rest of them that are in fact reserved to the people. And that amendment has not been very popular with the courts in the last 200 years, as far as I know. I mean, the only time I know that it has actually been used recently was, I guess, in the Connecticut birth control case in the 60s when they ruled the right to privacy was involved. So the Ninth Amendment doesn't get a lot of play that I'm aware of. Again, I'm not a legal scholar.
Yeah,
but, you know,
that was more a privacy issue, and I think that was Justice Brennan, one of the great justices of the 60s and 70s, that he ruled.
But the issue here had to do with the right to, essentially, Ed was saying, look, Mr. Facer isn't hurting anybody, he's not interfering with anybody else, there's no victim. I mean, I didn't hear anybody's talk about the fact that there was no shelter, which astounded me, because that's the most powerful argument given, you know, what the courts in the state have ruled in the Eichhorn case, that if there is no shelter, you have a necessity defense. If there's a necessity for you, you have to be able to sleep. There is a necessity to sleep. Ed pointed that out, but didn't emphasize the fact that there was no shelter that night, I don't think. Do you recall his mentioning that? I don't remember that.
And as I say, I didn't read his opening brief, nor did I read his reply brief, but I'm assuming that, and I talked to Ed last night, briefly about the Ninth Amendment, and he showed me the book that he had referenced in court today. And in there, it talks about that there is really no enumerated right to travel, but you definitely have a right to travel. There is no enumerated right to own a house, and yet you have a right to own a house. Mm-hmm. The point he's making is there is no enumerated right to breathe, no enumerated right to live, no enumerated right to, you know, to sleep. But you do have a right to sleep. It's accepted by everyone that you have a right to sleep.
I don't think that the local courts have much interest, for one reason or another, in the Constitution in terms of using the Constitution to overturn a case. What you have to do is you have to use court cases and statutes, I think, to overturn cases. And those were not in great evidence in Ed's argument that I'm aware of.
Well, but what you have to do is use established court cases by analogy or by extension. And that's a common research tool. It's a common draftsmanship tool. And what you do is you take a case that sets precedent for some reason on some similar facts, if you can get them, but it doesn't really need to be on what they call all fours factually, but some ruling that you can use by extension to show that you have a right to sleep. And if you can do that, Ed feels you can do that through the Ninth Amendment. He feels that it's a case of first impression for the very reasons that you're saying.
First impression? What does that mean?
It means that the courts have not ruled on it, nor have they established any precedent with regard to the application of that amendment. And that's what Ed's saying.
Well, the idea that you're going to get a local Santa Cruz panel to make rulings on a constitutional basis that will overturn their colleagues beneath them, it happens. I mean, we saw it happen once with a suppression motion in court today.
It happened today. That's right.
But, you know, and that was surprising to, I guess, Art Dudley, the attorney who argued that the woman who was in the room, who the police officer turned to and said,
when's the last time you used?
Yeah, when's the last time you used an illegal drug? Had put her on the spot in a position where she felt unable to leave, and therefore that was an illegal detention.
The standard is, would a reasonable person in that position have felt that they were free to leave?
Most people don't know that they have the right to say to a police officer when he asks you anything or she asks you anything whatsoever to say, am I free to go? And if the officer says you're not under detention or not under arrest or it says in essence, it doesn't say you're not free to go, then you can gradually, quietly begin to leave. That's part of the forum and the Know Your Rights proposals and suggestions made by Wes Modes in the kind of street trainings he did with his colleague on the streets in the last couple of years, showing you how to ask three simple questions. One, am I free to go? And I guess the other two rules are, I have nothing to say, I would like to speak to my attorney, you do not have my consent to search. Otherwise, their suggestion is just shut up and don't say anything else.
I actually recommend one step further, and I've given similar classes to what Wes is talking about, and I recommend that those four be placed on a card, and you don't say a word. You simply slip the card out of your pocket, you hand it to the officer, and you stand there quietly and wait to see what happens. And that has worked remarkably, especially on the East Coast. For some reason, these things seem to work quite a bit differently on the West Coast, believe it or not, than they do on the East.
We've worked with the issue of trying to figure out how homeless people, because usually it's not am I free to go, it's am I free to go back to what I'm doing, am I free to go back to sleep, am I free to go back to performing musically and busking, am I free to go back to panhandling if I need to be doing that, am I free to go back to associating with my friends right here in the spot where you just suddenly interrupted what I was doing. So it's not am I free to go, it's am I free to go on with what I'm doing, officer, because I'd like to go back to what I'm doing. It's a slightly different approach.
But that's what we're talking about as an extension of the law.
Right, and that's what I think is actually something very concrete and practical. It isn't just a matter of us abstractly discussing one person's, frankly, unlikely appeal. I always regarded this appeal as extremely unlikely to succeed, given the nature of the courts and frankly, the way that the case has been argued, because I think the only way they're going to overturn this is if you can show there was no shelter that night and there was a necessity to sleep.
I think there's other. I may just interject really quickly, I think there's other ways. One of the things that I've noticed is the difference between the county and the sheriffs, and we've talked about this privately too, Robert. The way they treated us, the way they dealt with everything was so much more professional, at such a higher level of evidence gathering. The way they came out with the video cameras, the still photography, really documented themselves, made an effort at least to do so. And one of the things I've noticed is city police department is sloppy as shit, and they make all kinds of mistakes. For instance, what would be wrong with the simple argument, I wasn't even asleep, prove it. What proof do you have I was covered in my
sleeping
bag?
You had your breathing. Your breathing was regular. You appeared to me to be sleeping.
Okay, whatever. But I'm saying then they got to do that. Is what I'm saying.
Right,
they
and they will
go through that.
And they will.
Okay,
and
well,
you will be dismissed as the victim who's trying to essentially challenge your opinion.
You don't.
I don't know it except that I've seen it happen in dozens of cases in the 80s and 90s when that kind of defense was tried.
Well, maybe they would have to add that to the post-training along with whether or not you can indicate or you can tell horizontal nystagmus that an officer has to subjectively have some idea about whether someone's asleep or not.
I think it's just a lot of angles.
Kim Baskett is going to rule guilty. I'm sorry. And so is Simons.
I'm in Gallagher's court.
I don't think Gallagher is going to rule any differently. But we'll see. Yeah, you will certainly see. And I'm not saying people shouldn't try that defense. But the idea that suddenly it's a great novel idea that it has been tried.
Well, you keep trying.
I mean, you keep trying, but you also got to recognize what.
That's the whole point of peace camp, and that's the whole point of what we
tends
do, what
to
we did,
work,
so,
and what know. Doesn't work. Now, it is true. I think the value of those resisting by civil disobedience and by persistent public profile sleeping outside is not so much. It's not a legal argument they're engaging in. It is a human testament that they're making, and that is what's supposed to appeal to the community.
That we made. I mean, that's
and that you guys
about.
Have made for sure, you know, and that I made too the first few nights I was out there, but you know, not recently, and that people are continuing to make. Whether that's the best tactic and the best energy for people to put
well,
forward.
You got enough tickets to try everything.
We got hundreds and hundreds of citations now
to deal with.
But, along that line, I kind of wanted to pursue something that we started to talk about on Sunday. And that was actually occupying some city-owned public space and establishing a sleep-free zone. And having that be...
A free sleep zone?
A free sleep zone.
So we all have a sleep-free zone throughout Santa Cruz. There's no sleep in those zones.
There you go. And that's something we had brooded about for a minute as a tactic that I thought would be to be able to move the protest forward into something that would... kind of galvanize the movement.
And again, what is this? I'm not quite sure I understand what you're suggesting.
When I first went to peace camp, when I was over at the courthouse, many of the folks that I talked to, and I was over there many times, of course, said, why can't they just give us some city-owned land that we can all go camp on, and they can just let
us
go?
That's a perennial
suggestion. And I said that in the past it had failed for a number of reasons, and Free, when I talked to him, has a number of reasons why he thinks it's failed, and I have a number of reasons why.
Yeah, and we had a discussion on the air that it hadn't failed particularly, but my point was that they won't allow it to happen. That's the problem. That if you try to do it through
if we refrain from doing things that people weren't going to let us do, that weren't going to allow to happen, we'd never get anything done. This is
exactly.
What they call
for sure. And I'm not saying
that's why they call it civil
disobedience. Right. But
that's why they call it laying yourself
on the line. But the illusion that you can all you guys need to do is buy a piece of property and get people to okay it and go there and set up some tents and make sure you have porta potties. Everything will be okay. It's just not true. That has been tried by people in the past.
And that's not my premise.
And I'm not saying it doesn't work. The reason it doesn't work, if it doesn't work, there may be problems that have come up and certainly have. Mm-hmm. But the principal problem is the city's refusal to allow it to happen because they have, I really have to say because they're a bunch of fucking bigots. But, the way to put it.
Well, that's pretty much it. And as I said in response to this question when I was spokesman to Peace Camp 2010, was that if we only had the true goodwill of the government and cooperation of the police department, we actually could, and we did prove it at Peace Camp 2010, and this is how we did. For 45 days, we had, as Robert will testify and Becky Johnson will testify and everything, we had a very detailed peace treaty or agreement or rules of engagement, whatever you want to call it, with the bailiffs especially, because they were right there in our faces, right there in that room. And we had, times when we had to accomplish certain things, like clear the ramps and the steps. And we kept those rules for 45 days. And we allowed the sheriff department to come into the encampment anytime they wanted to remove criminals, to remove drug addicts, to remove drunkards, and they did. And I would tell everybody, please sit down, and everybody would sit down so that the cops were not threatened. They would come in, they would remove the person, and they would come out. We had a working agreement, and guess what? For 45 days, peace camp raged, dude. It was one of the coolest things happening in Santa Cruz.
What I'm suggesting is use that model and move it somewhere and see if it'll work.
It will only, as I said, the goodwill of the government, the city government, and the true cooperation of the police department.
Well, you're going to have neither of those things. But what you might have, and this is why when I heard the peace camp was moving to City Hall, I went, oh God, here we go again.
Here we go again.
But before we, in the sense that we tried this for months and months, it's not a good location except for briefly, you know. And now it becomes a very out of the way location. But I think there are a variety of locations that can be tried.
We're coming, caller.
And we do have a caller. Hey there, caller. Are you? You're welcome to Free Radio.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Hey there, Drum Circle Dave. What's a good word?
How's it going, Rob? How you doing, man?
What's up, Dave?
Not so good, Dave, but how's life treating you?
Well, it's all right, I guess. You know, no real serious problems at the Drum Circle.
Really?
Now, by the Drum Circle, you mean the drum mini circle squeezed onto the path along the levee?
Yeah, the drum line, yeah.
Yeah, the
kind of
like
that.
Line,
yeah, no
along
problems,
the levee.
Really.
That's the place that they've been driving to.
A couple of drive-bys by
the police,
but no bike.
Serious.
Yeah, it's been pretty reasonable, you know.
So how long did the Drum Circle go on yesterday?
Oh, it went from like say 2 to dark.
And how many people?
9 o'clock.
How many people were there?
Oh, at least 25.
And
we had a good old time. Yeah, good shindig, Rob.
Could you get police protection? Were they in there making sure everybody didn't have any weapons, illegal drugs?
Yeah, there were
a
couple guys lifting up their shirts and stuff, showing them they didn't have anything. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
They drove by, yeah.
Did you ask the police to take off their weapons so they could join in the dancing, perhaps?
Well, no, they were all new guys. We didn't, you know, new faces. They were just checking us all out.
Did you show them how to drum, perhaps?
Maybe Sergeant Harms has got a desk job now, kind of cush.
So there were no sights. Sounds like you're taking a bath there or washing dishes. What are you doing?
I am, man. I'm doing the dishes, man, you know.
Right. Well, listen, thank you for the update. We're gonna leave you to your splashing.
Yeah, man, it's kind of great on the radio. But, yeah, it's a normal life. People are normal down in Santa Cruz as much as they can be. I hope you guys are having a good time down there on the Bayou Boss. And I hope those Memphis women just think the world of you.
Well, we'll see about that.
Well, you know, I want to say hi to all the Santa Cruzians and let them all know that we don't have a 24-hour bathroom in Santa Cruz, so hold it in for like 12 hours, and maybe they'll give you some relief down there at the city.
Thank you, Dave.
Hey, Rob, I hope peace camp's going all right, and I hope you guys are okay.
Thank you.
Peace.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
There actually are two 24-hour bathrooms in Santa Cruz. One of them, I was able to confirm with Monica Martinez, executive director of the Homeless Service Center, is still, having been opened by Doug Loisel when he was managing things last year, it has been continued to be open 24 hours, provided, of course, you're not excluded from the Homeless Service Center, but they, according
to... Or absolutely despise the place. Like
which
I
you
do.
Absolutely despise, but still, you're allowed to go in and take a dump in the Homeless Service Center, unlike, let's say, almost
any...
More
likely to take a dump on the Homeless
and
Service
that's
Center.
And
perhaps.
The second location is?
The second location is, of course, the famous Ed Frye Memorial Porta Potty in front of City Hall, which is a part of the Peace Camp 2010 sanitary facility.
Which got ticketed, actually, the other night for not having a license plate.
That's true. Ed Frye's not content with harassing Ed Frye and you and all the other Peace Camp 2010
stores. They are now attacking the shooter.
They are attacking
yes.
the innocent porta potty because they figure, you know.
But it's strange that it took them that
if
long
the
to figure out
there,
that was the key
the
component of Peace Camp.
Well, I mean, only has it smelled to defend itself.
No,
yeah,
but
it's a pretty stinky situation.
No, though, that's a key component of the Peace Camp. Without the shitter, Peace Camp would almost fall apart overnight. So it's funny that it took them that long. This is how dumb these pigs are that it took them that long to figure out, oh my God, maybe we should get rid of the shitter!
Yeah, well. Now, there's no need to shout into the microphone.
Sorry.
Yeah,
very
be
sorry
nice
about
to the
that.
Microphone.
No, when I first saw the porta-potty at the county building when Peace Camp 2010 started, I said, hey, this is legitimate. They're going somewhere now.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that...
And you know, see what I said? They're going somewhere now.
It's the only reason I stayed.
Oh, they're going.
I was on double entendre. It was the only reason I stayed.
Slowing you down. The neurons not firing quite there. It's the shells or something.
A little tired tonight. You know it is. Not enough sleep.
Interview Councilman Wayne today at War SL.
Yes. Fall is upon us.
Fall has fallen. That's correct. And here we are. So
you
should
talk about the interview.
Actually, what I may do is I may play some of the interview because I promised to play Catherine Byer's interview, which we had yesterday. These are two council members that came to Peace Camp 2010. Catherine did and came to a couple blocks away from Peace Camp 2010. Don Lane did to talk about, at my request, different subjects. But I was mainly interested in discussing this so-called sleeping ban ordinance amendment that I've talked about on the air before coming up at the City Council on Tuesday. This is a law proposed by John Barisone, which says if you are on a waiting list, then if you're ticketed by the police, you can take your ticket over to the city attorney's office and get it dismissed. Now, currently, the situation is, well, actually, it's a little unclear, but I think, according to what Monica Martinez seemed to be confirming, is if you're currently on a waiting list, when you're given a ticket, then you go back to the homeless service center. There's a ticket for sleeping, not a ticket for a movie show or a nice rock opera, nothing like that. This is a $97 fine ticket. If you're given a citation for sleeping, you go to the homeless service center and you say, well, can you please demonstrate that there was no shelter that night? And they write you a little note that says, July 14th, there was no shelter. And you go to court, and you then get it dismissed. Now, this, in a way, this proposal cuts out the court. It says you just have to go to the city attorney's office, so it's a little quicker.
One of the nicest guys in the world. He'll give you a hug and a big old
John
kiss
Barisone,
on the forehead.
Yeah, that's great.
I mean, that's going to be fun in and of itself. That's just going to be a blast going down there to have to see him fucking 14 times a week.
You know, it might
week.
Give you an opportunity to study the law and study the lawyers that are making, you know, this city such a place of international repute.
I think the point is that it still imposes an affirmative burden on people.
You know, on the upside, it is, for example, usually for most people, it's a shorter walk to the city attorney's office than to the court. It's a shorter wait. It's easier to get into the city attorney's office than wait around for a fucking court date and sign up for a court date.
We'll see after this law goes into effect.
Walk in, and we don't know if it's going to. Right. But in other words, in theory, it's a little easier if you're on the waiting list.
But what about the trees? What about the trees?
What about the trees?
The paper, the trees.
You mean about writing all those tickets?
Yes.
I'm
more concerned about the trees that bulldoze down in the river bottom every year, man.
I see. Well, you and John Barisone have to talk that out, I think. In any case, this law is coming up at City Council, so I invited both these City Council members to come and talk to us, and they did on separate days. Monica Martinez, Executive Director of the Homeless Service Center, whose organization is a key part of this whole issue, also said she wanted to talk not so much with us, but with a select group that were concerned about this issue. Me, Ed Fry, Linda LeMaster, Attorney Kay Wells, and I think Sally Williams of the Homeless Service Center Board of Directors.
You're not included in that group?
And I'm also included. Okay. If I wanted to be, I find myself thinking, why go to these meetings? If they're not going to issue a letter that says there was no shelter for the last 4 months, as there wasn't, and if they're not going to allow people to get... You know, if they're not going to acknowledge that they'll have somebody there who will say that if anybody calls in to ask and honestly say that, then why even talk to them? They seem to be obfuscating and blocking the whole
thing. I've always said we should be protesting them. I mean, we should be marching on them and picketing them.
Well, you quit before you could organize that one, Chris. And I'm sorry you did, because I think it would have been a good protest. But right now, I don't know if people have that sufficient organization or energy to organize a kind of a protest, although perhaps they do, to go out to the Homeless Service Center and demand that. I did have a long conversation with Monica Martinez this morning, and she seemed to, she cleared up a few items which they may be minor, I think, and they are in a certain sense, because what Ed Fry wanted and what the Peace Camp protest was originally about was his demand, no tickets shall be given, no homeless people awakened, if on a call to the Homeless Service Center, the police department finds, as it should call every night to find out, there are no spaces available. That's what he wanted.
Well, that's what many of us have been saying.
And that's what people have been saying. You know, and that seems to be pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
And in fact, the Jones decision, and I think the Spencer settlement in San Diego and Los Angeles, respectively, went even further. Los Angeles Jones and San Diego Spencer, it said, you don't have to prove and go down to the center or get a call to show there are no beds. It is a common agreement that there just is insufficient shelter of a magnitude that means that it's highly unlikely you're going to get a place. And that's sufficient. We know that as a condition. It has been shown. And its testimony has been established.
What kills me about that?
And so wait a minute. So I want to hear that, but just a minute. That being the case, you shouldn't have to even do what Ed suggests. Call the shelter to find out. We know it now. We know it already. We know it until, you know, as the settlement in L.A. requires, 1,250 more. It's actually got to be like 10,000 more, shelter beds are available. Mm-hmm. But until massive shelters are... camping accommodations or housing is available, there ain't going to be enough shelter. And it's known. So why this rigmarole? And as you know, Chris, the answer is because they want to maintain their, you know, pristine little homeless-free community.
Connection with the city.
But you were going to say something. I just wanted to say that.
I just wanted to point out that also Peace Camp never asked for any... In fact, we were succinct to put it in their face. We're not asking for the beds. We're not asking for more money. We're just asking that the homeless shelter people do their fucking job and advocate for the homeless people by the simple act of saying what is a fact.
Yes. That's what we wanted, and we have not been able to get a straight statement out of them, at least not a printed statement, nor was I able to persuade Monica, though she said she would look into it, to return to what even was the prior policy of 2 months ago, mm-hmm. where if you got a ticket, then you could go in and get a little letter that said, if on that date there was no shelter, you know, we'll write a letter and you can take it to the court. And now you're required to have been on the waiting list right. on that day. You have to have known about it, and as you pointed out to Don Lane, how do you know there is such a program when you come into town, and so forth. And, you know, I got from Monica, well, we're concerned about, you know, expanding our program. We're concerned about making sure people know about our program and our service. Well, I don't think homeless people should be subjected to being the tools of the advertising needs of the Homeless Service Center and its desire to expand. That's a little unfair because I think their need to expand is based upon not some monetary deal, but upon their belief that they are serving people. They want to serve people better. I think they do. I think these people are not making millions out of the Homeless Service Center. You know, they're making more than the average homeless person, I think, for sure. But they're not making a lot of money, and they probably could be making more money somewhere else. So I think there's a certain emotional commitment to... They believe they're trying to be helpful. Of course, then the
I think in this day and age when jobs are scarce as they are, I think everybody's clinging to their own and walking to their own.
And
these poverty
too.
Pimps up there that are running this homeless service center are exactly the same. You know, I have said, and I've said this to Steve before off air, The key to solving the problem at the homeless service center is to fire all of them cocksuckers, and it's all volunteer after that. If you want to work there, you work there. If you want to move on, you move on, and somebody else takes your place. But it's got to come from the heart, and that's another key of why Peace Camp worked, is because everybody that was there because they wanted to be.
And yet you, Steve, you would favor a living wage, I would presume.
Of course.
I think that
public service
get a job
requires
you know.
Some public sacrifice. You know, I think salaries across the board for most executive directors, program directors, program coordinators in most nonprofits with which I've been affiliated, which is probably two dozen, are more than they should be paid. I will tell you the average salary for a Monica Martinez level position in any of the nonprofits of that size is about $80,000 to $85,000.
That's what I understand.
Yeah.
Now, you have something else you wanted to say?
No, I'm just saying that I think you can get people to be self-sacrificing enough to go in there and work for less money.
Mm-hmm.
There's other benefits. You could give them a place to live there. They could have like a little apartment out back. I did that in San Francisco. I worked for a nonprofit that gave me a place to live as part of the deal.
Well, what you'll do is you'll give them a smaller salary and then put them on the waiting list for a place to get on there.
Ah, the waiting list. The waiting list solution, yes. If you want to read my reflections on this upcoming law that will require you to get on a waiting list if you want to have a ticket signed off, even though there was no shelter that night. Now, I pointed out to Monica, this is a change in the policy from what the Homeless Service Center did before, and as I said, I don't regard it as the best policy anyway, but it makes it even a worse policy if you'd have to have been on the waiting list when you were given a ticket, because you might not have known about it. You might have been excluded for some reason. It seems like it also has a sort of a self-interested quality from the Homeless Service Center's point of view. You must be in our club for to be, or in order for you to have your constitutional rights. I actually wrote a story that said, give up your constitutional rights for, how about trade your constitutional rights for a place on the waiting list? You know, that's, but,
so now the disqualifications that you're talking about in terms of being on the waiting list are,
she didn't
are
know that there, she felt that there were very few disqualifications, that they were only very limited, and then she was going to look into that, and she was going to get back to me on what those disqualifications were, if any. She didn't think there were more than a dozen people who were banned from the Homeless Service Center, and she wasn't clear whether that meant they would be banned from the waiting list, I would imagine it would, but I don't know. But the point is that I think she likes the idea, and I think it's a step forward to have this Homeless Service Center give you a receipt that says you're on the waiting list, and so when the cop comes up, you say, here's my receipt. And I guess Ed Fry.
It's still apartheid, though.
Yeah. Well,
because
sure.
If you didn't get the
and
receipt,
Ray
Grunike's.
Yeah. I'm going to finish the sentence. Ray Grunike was suggesting today in this discussion you and I and all three of us had with Don Lane, that you don't even need to have the cop check the waiting list to see if this is a real receipt that the person has or whatever, because they can just look at the date on the receipt, and if that date has not been passed, then it means the person's on a waiting list, and this person should not be given a ticket. That is not what the law says, though. The law says the person's tickets will be dismissed if they can show they were on the waiting list.
Right.
And so we've been belaboring the point for too long, and it's coming up at City Council. Read more about it online at indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, and you'll be hearing more about it because Chris and Steve and I and Don talked it to death earlier today, and I'll be playing that tape on Sunday. I have a show on Sunday from, it's going to start at 8:30, I think, with the Catherine Byers discussion, and then go all the way through to...
You can play it on my station afterwards.
And you're welcome to play it on your station, too. Your station, of course, is...
Unbroken Chain, Internet Radio, and I guess I'll do my station ID now, ucir.limewebs.com.
So I'm going to play a little of a few interviews from the streets to give people a chance to hear some different voices. I'm going to remind you that you can call in 427-3772. And please do, because, hey, it adds spice or in variety and stuff.
Lets us know somebody with a pulse is listening.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Around 7 o'clock on September 17th, and we're talking with
Michael David.
Here we are. Talking to two musicians, a man who plays the...
I play the bansuri and guitar.
And
it's a type of flute, a bansuri.
I got you. And, of course, we're all talking with...
Ricardo Lopez. I play guitar right up here on Soquel and Pacific. Yeah, this new cop has been running down, breaking the truce, and running down and giving us tickets down at Duck Beach, where we've been feeding the ducks and hanging out for over a year.
Yeah.
And now this one cop is running down... A new woman cop with a blue uniform. Now, who are these blue uniforms? Are they in training? But, yeah, she's giving out tickets for being down at Duck Beach feeding the ducks, which we've done for over a year.
San Lorenzo Park, right?
Down at San Lorenzo River at Water Street.
We feed the ducks.
Duck Beach is what we call the beach right there where the ducks... We've fed some of those ducks since they were babies. They bring their babies. And now this one, and because, see, that's not behind downtown.
Generations of ducks.
Generations of ducks. But it's that part of the river isn't behind downtown. It's behind other businesses. So the police have had a go sleep down there and stay out from behind downtown. Now a new blue shirt cop ran down there and gave us tickets, which, of course, we're going to fight. Because there are no signs there anyway.
Now, how many people got tickets and when did they get them?
We got three of them the other day, and I think Mike got one. Four of us so far from the same person. None of the other cops even bother us at all.
Now, is this a police officer or a security guard?
A police officer, yeah. If we're a security guard, we wouldn't...
A younger woman, a brunette?
Yes.
Not Officer Schoenfeld.
Yeah. She's kind of chubby. We don't know.
Officer Schoenfeld is not really chubby.
Yeah. Okay.
Testified against me in court.
Okay, well, okay. She's beyond chubby, but yeah, she's kind of out of shape to be a police person. And well, yeah, but then a number of them are out of shape. But yeah, short brunette. But yeah,
and, give you a legal place to go?
No. And she particularly seems to hate me because she's run down there looking for me, got Mike one time, then she ran down there looking for me again, and Anna was down there playing guitar.
Anna Banana.
Anna Banana, the famous one.
Anna Richardson, the famous injuncted woman.
Yeah, who sleeps on the bike trail or in the riverbed.
Outside of the forbidden zone.
Outside in the forbidden zone.
Out of the forbidden zone.
Yes, out of, yes. And, yeah, for safety, and as a matter of fact, is a duck feeder, too.
Yeah, I'm a duck feeder.
We're all duck feeders. It's one of the great things we do. We feed the ducks and the wood ducks.
Ducky to me, man.
It's great. We call it duck beach, and many people participate in the duck feeding, which is a good thing. Yeah. And the ducks come up and walk on us. They'll stand on us. They'll demand food. They're our friends.
Are they quacking in rhythmic proportion to the music is the question.
Ah, only the females do the loud quack. That's only the females. The males do a kind of kind of sound, yeah.
You've actually become rather subtle.
My mother's a birder. My mother's a birder. My friend Jolie's brother is a birder. You know, I went to I had extra funds, I would join the Audubon Society and count and participate in the count. As you know, the birding contest just happened a few days ago, and this great birder, I forget his name, he identified 380.
I'm not going to either give you the bird or call you a bird brain on this issue. However, I notice you have some money in your case. How's Pickens out here on the mall in front of Borders?
Not too bad today. It's been okay. It's Friday night, of course, and the people of Santa Cruz love music and do support their many excellent street musicians that are here in Santa Cruz, yeah.
How about the police around the unreasonably disturbing noise laws? There have been many reports of that.
The police are unreasonable, and they are disturbing. And yeah,
giving you people tickets for unreasonably disturbing noise.
No, but they do come up and just pick on certain people, like Suzanne gets picked on, and some of the more regular people. You know the joke in Santa Cruz where you can do everything you want to do, or anything you like, unless you're from Santa Cruz, kind of like that. They kind of look for her and pick on her. And, yeah, they are smart.
Well, they don't want a bad example set for the youth.
You know, that they are a bad example set for the youth, you know. And they're not even from Santa Cruz. They're from, like, other states like Ohio and places like that, and that's why they hire them, because they'll mess with those California types. It's wrong. Check and see where they're from. They're from little towns far away.
Now, let me ask you this. You've heard of Peace Camp 2010.
Peace Camp is one of the best, most progressive things that is happening, as people are banding together and standing up and exercising their constitutional rights. Yeah, they say about the Constitution, use it while you can.
Use it or lose it.
Or lose it, that's right. And, you know, they're standing up for their constitutional rights and being treated like terrorists or something. Straight up bullying. What they've shown is that they hire people from out of state to come in and bully Santa Cruz and California people. And the cops are from out of state, bullies. Thugs.
Now, do you actually have evidence that any of the new police officers or the first alarm security guards are from out of state? Are you just giving me a musical melody here without the music?
Out of state starts east of the five. Out of state starts east of the five.
Meaning the five being?
The highway five. No life east of the five, right?
I won't comment on that. Let me, let's leave with a little musical farewell.
All right. Okay, we will.
If you have any songs about Santa Cruz, of course, I'd be even
all kinds
especially.
Of them, but we're having a battle with Huntington Beach over whether I can play Surf City, which SC, Surf City, is Santa Cruz, right? Yeah. Not HB, Huntington Beach.
I see.
Yeah. We don't care where Jan and Dean were from.
Go ahead.
It's Huntington Beach. Anna. Crying, lonely teardrops. Pillows never dry, lonely teardrops.
as we're not enough, we hear now hear the drumming of Hammerhead.
Tamarack is a drummer who actually has faced some unreasonably disturbing noise citations that have been thrown out when the ticketing officer, who I understand it was Officer Schoenfeld and may have been Sean Riley, who were the two individuals who went after the Huffsters in front of Bookshop Santa Cruz, they didn't show up. And again, I could be wrong about that, so I apologize to Mr. Riley and Ms. Schoenfeld if that's the case, but that was my impression from at least one of the citations that Tamarack said he got, and it was dismissed for failure to show by the
so forgive you. She's feeling froggy for having crushed you in court.
She's probably feeling her oats. Yeah, she did crush me, and I really apologize, folks. I had promised half an hour to go to, on, I think I put it online, I was going to play Commissioner Kim Baskett's historic opinion, which I guess you, Steve, and you too, Chris, heard in court that day.
Yeah, I was there.
And, you know, it really needs to be played on the air and then, you know, carefully analyzed. It was quite surprising to me, not because I expected to be found not guilty. I did expect to be found guilty, though I was not guilty of any crime, particularly not of unreasonably disturbing noise. I would say police were, you know, even if I were singing badly, that's constitutionally protected, particularly the songs I was singing.
Yeah, but you sing rather good.
Well, perhaps so. But in any case, it was bizarre the kind of reasoning that she used, and I'm going to have to wait in giving my analysis because I want to give it with her opinion in front of us, and we don't have that right now. It's not a written opinion, it is a verbal opinion, but it was recorded, and I will hopefully on Sunday have it. I thought I had it with me today. I've looked at my tapes, and they doesn't seem to be here. I blame Chris just because he's here. And
we get more listeners on Sunday
he's
anyway.
He's got a strange-looking beard, and I think that's reason enough to blame him for something.
I get blamed for everything. I'm good for it.
He's a blameworthy fellow. So anyway, again, we're gonna hear a little more. This is a September 17th. We're talking about 5 days ago down on Pacific Avenue. And let's hear some more. Any comments from either of you guys about anything that's going on here? Should we just proceed?
No, it's great stuff.
Go ahead. It is. Interesting.
I noticed you were singing along there, Steve.
Perhaps absolutely.
Yes.
He's having a good time here in the studio. I noticed. I think he likes Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I do.
He's
going to
become a regular,
what about the
man.
Gay, lesbian, bi, transsexual forum that you should be at?
Whoa.
No, that was
Jesus,
last
that's a mouthful.
That was last week. I heard,
you do got to tell us about that later on, man.
Somebody screwed up on that one. Okay.
It was a profound disappointment.
And you were not endorsed. In fact, you've been to a number. Let me just ask you before we go back to this tape. You've been to a number of forums in the last 4 days. What's happened in the last 4 days? Anything new happened? I know you were at the police department, vet the police chief, and we talked.
You met the police chief?
Didn't sound. No.
Focus groups last night at the
Well, they had one focus group
center.
Intending to have more than one, but it sounded like a rather boring encounter when you described it, so I'm not really asking for...
No.
Unless something stands
no.
out that you want to talk about. No. But have there been any other meetings, any other things that have come up in the last 3 or 4 days that have attracted your interest or your scrutiny and prompted your commentary as a city council candidate?
I think more my disappointment because a week ago Thursday we had the GLBT forum. And, in fact, Bill Monning was there, some folks from the city pushing Measure H, things of that nature.
Measure H is, for those who don't know.
It's a percentage and a half increase in the user's utility tax.
And the significance of this is?
It's to fund public safety programs.
In other words, more money for the cops?
The 65% of our budget is for public safety. And apparently
you mean public safety, you mean walking
the
up and down
cops.
Pacific
and
Avenue
and
in uniforms with
that,
guns and so forth.
It's not enough, so maybe you need more. But no, I was disappointed at the GLBT forum because there was not a single question about GLBT. It was all about, you know, how do you feel about La Bahia, or how are you going to revive the local economy, or what do you think about public safety?
Nothing about needle exchange? Or?
Not a word about needle exchange.
And that is what you do, right, Steve? You're a needle exchanger.
I do needle exchange. In fact, I helped start the needle exchange as it's operating now when SCAP, who operated the Santa Cruz County Needle Exchange, lost their funding. Some friends of mine stepped in, asked me if I'd come on board to help them with their grant writing process because I do write grants professionally, so I stepped in and wrote their first operating grant, which we're now using to field a full schedule of outreach. I do a couple of outreach myself, one at Emmeline on
Much
Sunday.
Police harassment of Needle Exchange?
We have had very little. They'll drive by occasionally and glare at us if we have our exchanges at Barson and Bixby.
That sounds like our
job. But that's really about it. You know, we're well within the law, in fact, and people are with, according to the law, able to possess 10 needles in a biohazard and walk around wherever they want. In fact, the Assembly just passed a bill where you can, or is considering a bill, it may not be passed yet, where you can possess up to 30 needles. So Needle Exchange is a public health issue. Our organization alone in Santa Cruz County will exchange 230,000 needles this year. That's 230,000 needles that aren't in your playgrounds, your backyards, on your beaches, on your riverbanks.
Are any candidates actually trying to end Needle Exchange?
Not that I know of. It just hasn't come up.
I see.
The disappointment is that I have to generate these issues myself. I have to generate any issues concerning homelessness. I have to generate any issues concerning Needle Exchange.
By generating, you have to ask the questions at the forums that nobody else
asks. Well, I have to answer the questions in a way that raises these topics, and it's not easy to do.
Right. All right, so anything else happened in the last 4 days you want to comment?
We had a nice, actually, your friends at Duck Pond, we had a nice forum for Take Back Santa Cruz on Sunday afternoon.
I did wander by.
And, that was interesting. At that time, we did have what they call a lightning round between questions, and they asked, one of the questions they asked was, are you in favor of the continuation of the camping ban, I think is what it is, and there were seven yeses and one no. It was me.
Yeah,
and then they
had
a follow-up. A companion question to that is, are you in favor of tighter regulation on RV parking on city streets? And again, there were seven yeses and one no, because simply that's just an extension of the camping ban. Tightening that's just aimed at homeless people who live in motorhomes.
Well, it's interesting. You know, down in Venice, there's been a apparently the Coastal Commission has ruled in prohibiting parking restrictions on RVs, and I'm wondering if the same kind of veto by the Coastal Commission against these essentially bigoted laws that go after people whose vehicles are their homes.
Mm-hmm.
Could be applied here. You might want to look into that, Steve.
Well, let's say, for instance, that you know out on Swanton or Delaware, out in that area that is clearly within the Coastal Commission's purview because it's within a certain number of feet of the ocean itself.
50 yards.
That they have posted no parking between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m., which essentially eliminates any possibility of being able to park your RV there overnight and get a good night's sleep. So that's an interesting point that I had not heard raised before. And if the Coastal Commission has any input and any authority over that, maybe it's something that ought to be looked at.
I'll put you in touch with Peggy Lee Kennedy, who has been successfully raising that issue down in Venice and Santa Monica. Let's hear some more from the street.
Absolutely.
This is Tamara.
I'm here with Kurt Bugger. Chris is at his usual spot at the coffee roasting company, and it's around 7:30. Chris is a refugee from Peace Camp 2010 and a radio broadcaster in his own right who is occasionally a commentator on my show, as well as a man who sometimes has his own radio and TV show. And what are you up to these days, Chris?
I'm not sure.
He's not sure. But you did notice some tents that went up at the San Lorenzo Benchlands, which I guess were up for about a week and then came down, but the people are still there.
At least a week, perhaps more, between 7 to 10 days, I would say. And it was very odd because, I mean, they were right there on the grass. They weren't hidden in the trees. They were on the edge of the tree line, but they were on the grass, so they were very, very visible. I think now thinking back, they did begin inside the tree line, just inside it, like 5 feet inside of it, and then they pulled them out to the grass, which is an odd strategy if you're trying to hide. You usually would want to push further down towards the river bottom rather than out on the grass.
We didn't talk to them the day after you told me about that. Amanda Shiney, who's an old activist who was here a year ago working to end the... we did part of a boycott bigotry campaign against Bunny Shoes and other stores backing this injunction against Anna Richardson and Miguel de Leon.
That might have something to do with the fact that isn't the owner sleeping with Ryan Kennedy or something like that?
She's the owner of... I think she's either now married to or the fiancée of Ryan Kennedy, and she's...
She's the daughter of Dale Williams Jewelers, I believe, or she's a part of that family.
I got the wrong son of a bitch of a business.
You've got to be more careful about it.
Well, they're just as bad. They call the cops about 3 times a day on people, so, you know.
And that business we're talking about is?
Dale Williams.
Yeah, is that true? Have you seen them doing that recently?
Constantly, yeah. If you go out in the alleyway here, it's a gathering spot in the morning because we've got nowhere else to go. I mean, we can't gather on the avenue. We can't, you know, most people, when they get up from the park area and from the San Lorenzo River bottom stuff, it's very sunny, it's very hot. People want to come up onto the street, they want to start their day, and they want to gather. And lately, we've been trying to do it, you know, we mostly meet up
at the roasting company and the Williams Jeweler.
The alley, well, back here, yeah. And they'll call in a heartbeat. If the gathering gets too big, if they're there for too long, if a person seems untidy or unsightly based on whatever, you know, arbitrary criterion these people have, sure, they'll call. I believe they call daily, and they don't hesitate to do so. And also in the front, too, they call a lot on, they're renowned for calling on performers, beggars. I mean, they will time you. They'll get you on the one-hour thing. They'll call for that. They'll call for anything they can to try to clear that area.
Well, they're trying to create a new Santa Cruz, Chris.
Yeah, I know.
Like the new Auda? Have you heard about that? Well, we won't get into that. Now,
I'd like to hear what their, I know this is your interview, but I'd like to know what was their, the deal when you talked to the folks down at Cheyenne and them down in the park.
Well, they'd only been there, they said, 2 or 3 days at that point, because I talked to them fairly quickly after
right,
we spoke.
After I told them.
And they said they hadn't been hassled by the police, that they just put up their tents and that they were crossing their fingers. And there were some other groups there, too. One other tent I saw, and we're talking for those who don't follow this. As you cross the footbridge to the San Lorenzo Park from, I guess it's River Street or Lower River Street or whatever
it is.
It
is River Street.
Then you can see as you look toward the toward Soquel Avenue to your left, you'll see the Soquel Bridge. You'll see the couple of tents were down there in the San Lorenzo Benchlands, which is the depressed area right below the duck pond and the
right.
park area where all the other stuff is happening.
Which is actually fairly close to where a whole bunch of us sleep, but those of us who primarily, who have been living there for like, you know, months or years, we go through those, what you call the benchlands, is that what you, and down into the river bottom.
Illegally, I might add.
Oh, I'm sure. Down into the river bottom and actually out onto the sandbars and the peninsulas, you know, those of us who are intrepid and just really want to be left the fuck alone, we'll go as deep as we can possibly get down into that area, right down onto the river bottom. It's very, very rare to see any officers or ranger dickhead or whatever his name is.
Chief Ranger John Wallace, perhaps.
Yeah, ranger dickhead. Down in the in that area, so only usually during the bulldozing time they go down there, primarily, I guess, so that we don't get squashed by the land movers.
The troublesome bodies don't turn up in the midst of the debris.
Well, and the funny thing is, you go down there and it's awful because they really don't care, and you can tell because you see blankets shredded, you see equipment, tents, tarps, just shredded afterwards. This debris is everywhere. So.
And we're going to interrupt this because, Chris, you have a comment. We also have
we also have
Drum Circle Dave on the line. But, Dave, hang tough for just a moment. Are you with me, Dave?
Yeah.
Hey, don't go away. Chris, you were saying that there's a more recent update on the San Lorenzo Park Benchlands area as an alternate campground de facto.
Yesterday I was coming back from court. As you know, I spent all day up in the courthouse. And coming back about 3 or so in the afternoon, I was walking down the levee way, and I saw Ranger Wallace with his truck just dead center in the middle of the grass. And, of course, I took note of that and tried to see what he was doing. And he was just sitting there. And the usual crew that I described in the interview just now that's been camping down there regular, a bunch of kids. It's actually grown to almost a dozen kids now and a couple of dome tents every night. Pretty much you've seen it, too. And they're still there. But they stay there all day. They take the tents down, but they stay in a gathering, and they feed each other, and they live their lives right down there in the park. And it's been sort of a little unsung occupation or whatever. But anyway, he decided he was going to clear it out. I guess his strategy became that he was just going to park there all day, because when I asked one of the fellows from the encampment, one of the kids that's been staying down there, I said, what's going on? How long has he been here? He's like, all day. And I was like, well, did you go up and talk to him? Did you ask him what he was about? He said, yes, I did. And I couldn't believe it. He said, yeah. I walked up and he was bragging. The kid told me that Wallace was bragging about how this strategy worked last time he was able to clear the park out for almost 2 months just by parking there all day. So I said, all right. So I walk up on the footbridge, throw my backpack off, get my camera out, and just start taking pictures of him right down below in the benchlands, staring at these kids. Well, took him about maybe 3 minutes of that. I took about 30 pictures, and then he fired up his engine and left.
You drove away Chief Ranger Wallace.
I don't know.
That is
maybe
really
he just doesn't like the
depressing
picture taken.
Fish.
Maybe
you know,
he just had something better to do after 4 hours.
He does a job he's trying to do, and you're intimidating him.
After 4 hours of sitting there.
I think it is.
I think maybe he probably had something else to
no,
do.
No, I don't want to hear it. Drum Circle Dave, what's your
I don't know what we pay him by hour, but...
Dave, you're there?
Yeah, man, I'm here, man.
So what's your thoughts on what you heard, and also, what have you got to tell us?
Oh, well, you know, I mean, hell, you know, that email I got about, you know, look out, here they come, you know, if you're a reporter and you're taking a picture of some cop bashing this guy over the head with a billy club, you're going to go to jail for that.
Well,
you know,
yeah, that's
like,
not in
California. Hell, that's like...
That's not in California, but that is...
Oh, Hitler, other... man. No, that was, like, right in my email box.
No, no,
man.
It's in
and
your email
like,
box.
Wow.
But, hey, excuse me. It's not about... Oh, it's not about California. It is about other states. But...
Well, it doesn't matter.
Well, it does. It actually does.
Kind of interesting,
right?
No,
it is interesting.
What is he talking about?
Go ahead.
Anyway, it's about, you know, what Chris is talking about. The same thing, you know? Here's this guy sitting on his ass, being a friggin' jerk, you know, number one right there in front of his boss. And his boss is up there in that little gray building going, oh, yes, I have it right here. It's in a file. It's called Public Nuisance Number One, and I'm him, you know, kind of thing, you know. And he's just causing problems for kids in the park, you know. But anyway, yeah, Chris, man, I feel you on that one. But, yeah, I was walking downtown, Rob. You still there?
Yes, we're here.
We're here.
Okay. And, you know, I mean... I have an instrument I play, and some of the drummers, you know, are, like, really cool with it, and some of them are, like, not so cool with it, you know.
And what is that instrument, Dave?
What?
What is it?
Well, it's a Russian toilet, man.
A Russian toilet.
What
is the difference between a Russian toilet and a Polish toilet? That's not a riddle, actually, or a joke.
I'm
just
wondering
what the difference
is. You know, I can agree with that.
A
but
Russian
anyway,
toilet.
A Polish
toilet.
I don't know, but anyway, yeah.
All right, so this is a real, this is a lot of shit,
like,
man. I got to tell you. Go ahead.
So, yeah, I'm walking downtown like Buster Brown, just getting down there by Soquel and Pacific there, and I go up, you know, there's a public restroom there, you know, people use it, you know. Now, I bring a toilet downtown to play, you know, and then here's this public, and it's closed. Now, I got the toilet with me,
uh-oh,
but there's a guy standing
I'm afraid I know
where
this is going.
I hope it's not going where... Oh,
tell him, I say, now, look, what's wrong with this picture? Why is this restroom closed, you know? And he's just, like, scratching his head, going, well, they're sandblasting it. I'm like, well, yeah, but, I mean, Jesus Christ, it's not Hollywood. Jeez, I swear there's a production going on down in there, Rob. What do you think of that?
I don't know, man, but I would certainly be pleased to hear you playing your Toilototsky or whatever you're calling it. But is there anything more you have to report before we cut you off abruptly and move on to the next call?
Oh, that's okay. There's just no 24-hour bathroom in Santa Cruz, as usual. Hasn't been for a while now. I don't know,
except
man. Maybe Genghis Khan knows about that. But, hey, you guys have a good
right.
night.
Thank you. And, of course, again, there are two open bathrooms, one at the Homeless Service Center, one at Ed Fry's Porta Potty, although it can
park
get...
in front of City Hall.
And if it, until it gets hauled away for too many tickets.
Oh, well, and you can come down and get your very own ticket if you want, down to City Hall, bring your sleeping bag, backpack, and a little bit of food for...
And we need some leaders down there, apparently. We won't get into that. Actually, no. I mean, yeah, there are a lot of really dedicated people down there, some of whom who are... well, they're all pretty dedicated, and some of them taking a lot of tickets. I guess one guy got arrested last night after for repeat sleeping crime. He was sleeping at 7:30 or lying on the sidewalk in the evening, and then they came back at 3:30 and they hauled him away because he was still sleeping. I guess they thought that was too long to be sleeping, or maybe, you know, he was sleeping, you know, he was occupying the piece of sidewalk for too long. It's interesting that that area in front of City Hall, the whole area including the City Hall complex, Civic Auditorium, and the library, is exempt from the downtown ordinances. It's not exempt from the sleeping ban, but it's exempt, for example, from the move-along law. It's exempt from the forbidden zones, so many feet from a building law. It's exempt from hacky-sacking prohibitions, all these other things. It's exempt from, because it's in a special zone. If you read the ordinances carefully, you find they only refer to the downtown zones, which are up and down Pacific Avenue and on the side streets. So they are being ticketed at Peace Camp 2010. I'm trying to cover it a little bit on the Peace Camp 2010 website. That's peacecamp2010.blogspot.com, I believe.
It is, yeah.
Maybe it's SC Peace Camp 2010.
I had a question. When you say they are hauled away, taken away, are they actually taken to jail?
Gary was taken to jail. He was the individual who was arrested. I apologize for outing him here.
How long are they held?
He was only held for 2 hours by his account.
That's the second time he's been in jail for Peace Camp.
And during that time, he confessed he took a nap on the bench. So that's
right. But he wasn't ticketed for that, I'm guessing.
Yeah, you know, in a way, I have to say that the jail might be considered a residence, so, or a domicile. Otherwise, they would all be sleeping illegally at night. We would have to make a citizen's arrest of both the jail authorities for making suffering or permitting to be done the sleeping that is being done in the Santa Cruz County Jail.
The commission of the violation of a local ordinance, we cannot tolerate.
People are thinking they're making a joke, but in fact, it is illegal to sleep in office buildings downtown. It's illegal to sleep in theaters.
Is that right?
Yes, unless it's a domicile. It is not legal to sleep, according to the legal opinions that were... And the law hasn't changed. That was the legal opinion that was presented back in the late 80s, and we were defending many, many of these cases, or I was reporting on that anyway. So that's my understanding, faulty as it may be. Let's hear some more from that man of the streets and of the airwaves, Curb Hugger Chris.
The messy campers. So it's clear that if they didn't do a thorough clearing ahead of time of the bottom, then there would be deaths. I mean... It just really brings to mind a death we had in Maine 2 years ago, where the DOT garage, Department of Transportation garage, was always a favorite place for an occasional intrepid sleeper to go sleep. And there was one that was sleeping behind those gigantic, like 15-foot-tall wheels of this, I guess they'd call it a road grader. It's a thing that makes, you know, it's got a blade on. It's a gigantic piece of equipment, and the wheel itself has to be 15 feet tall and probably 3 feet across. And there was a fellow sleeping behind it, and he was crushed to death. The operator got up in the morning, did not look behind the vehicle, and crushed the man. And I fear that every time they clear that bottom with those land movers, that they will eventually kill somebody. They can't find everybody all the time, and people sleep down there day and night. So
now, are you still doing a radio show, or is that in hiatus at the moment?
It's in hiatus at the moment. I'm trying to assess the popularity of it, to be honest with you. Other than a handful of activists here in town, I wasn't really getting a lot of hits. And it just could be that perhaps radio, for me anyway, my model of doing it has gone its route. I've been experimenting with television, and I'm personally at loose ends. I got a lot of skills, and I'm not sure what direction I want to go in, but I want to go in a direction that puts food in my belly, at least a little bit. And
the occasional cup of coffee.
The occasional cup of coffee. And as you well know, I'm not a greedy man. I'm not looking to make $1 million, but I got to find something that I can settle on that will at least keep me alive. The radio's still there. It's still a possibility. I just, you know, if somebody's got some feedback on it, if they want to, you know, send it to the station through Robert or whatever, if you really miss the station, then let me know.
And remind us of where the station is on the dial.
It's at ucir.limewebs.com. It's a fully internet station only. Although when I'm on the air, it can be listened to on all different devices, from your laptop to your iPhone. If people truly miss it and they were interested in it, I'm certainly interested in putting it back on, but again, it just didn't seem like it was taking off like I had expected. But I am looking at television. I think a free speech television station in this town would be really, really cool. I know how to do it. I've experimented to
point. Certain nest egg to do that?
No, no. Interest would be all. If people are interested in a free speech, radical, activist television station, it can be done. It can be done very, very easily. It can be done on a shoestring. That I can prove. That I've modeled for myself and proven it. I think it's an interesting idea. I think we can do it. I just, you know... I'm curious if there'd be some interest in it. That's all I guess.
Now, you also helped to set up the Santa Cruz Peace Camp 2010 website, or aspects of it, which is still going on. I noticed new stories are appearing. You've been keeping up with that?
I haven't, but people are accessing it. I believe Becky Johnson, who has the admins, and she's been sharing those with others. I from time to time, visit the Twitter site and visit the blog, and I've been seeing stories coming up on it. It's still active. Again, I guess, you know, as the former, I don't know, I've been called everything from spokesman to mayor of Peace Camp 2010. As the former participant, I would encourage the members to consider calling it complete. I don't want to say calling an end to it or whatever, but calling it complete and moving on. I'm concerned for people that they will not be prepared when the rainy season hits. You know, I'm concerned that people are not paying attention to their own lives, and perhaps they should be, especially as we approach winter and everything. I think it's done as much as it can do. I'm sorry we didn't win. I thought we could, you know, have a complete victory. You told me in private you didn't think that was possible. I guess we're somewhere in between, because we did have some victories from it.
And in fact, the City Council's recent introduction of an ordinance, which essentially... exempts you from the camping ordinance if you're on a waiting list, which is an interesting aspect to this amendment that's being proposed. Although we've said it's not enough, policemen should not be waking people up when there's no shelter at all. And the killing.
You shouldn't be waking people up, period. And that's what I've always stuck by. Yeah. I mean,
Ed Fry, who co-founded this whole thing, agrees with you there.
I've always disagreed with anybody who wants to continue to point out that aspect of it, because it's a diversionary tactic, and I think it played into their hands in this case. I think that's why they're doing this. I think we overplayed that card so bad that they're thinking that this is all it's going to take to get this whole situation off their back. This idea that there's a necessity exemption from a law that's already unconstitutional. I mean, there's no need for a necessity defense from a law that's already blatantly a violation of your rights. I've always said that. To me, this thing coming up in the City Council simply proves my point that we got diverted by bringing that up. And
well, it's interesting that I think, you know, the council's move does not remove the cruel and unusual punishment of people being awakened at night, even if we're talking about the limited situation, the proviso that there's no shelter. But there is no shelter, and putting people on a waiting list does not equal shelter, and therefore, given the fact that three infractions is now a misdemeanor, and the sleeping ban is now punishable by jail, and that means that, again, a loss of liberty is implied in these citations. And so it's an interesting situation that calls to mind the Los Angeles Jones decision, the San Diego Spencer settlement, and the Miami Pottinger agreement way back in 1998.
Well, and I'm not a lawyer, but to me it also violates the Equal Protection clause of the Constitution, because, you know, if you live here and have lived here for years, you might possibly know about the Homeless Services Center, and you might possibly know about that list, and you might possibly either have gone and put yourself on it or not, and made that choice, and then you get your ticket or you don't.
If you nearly arrive.
But if you have, as many, many people are, as we've discussed endlessly ad nauseum, the geographical location of Santa Cruz, it's between Monterey and San Francisco on Route 1, okay, we have a lot of travelers. We had even more this summer, because as was just in the paper, we now have the highest poverty rate in, I think, 20 years. Almost one out of seven people are now below the poverty line in America. Okay, we're starting to reach a level of Mexico and countries like that, okay? And so we've had more people moving around, because when poverty strikes, people move around to look for options, to look, and they're not, like Mike Grotkin says, looking for the best city to get welfare in. What they're looking for is opportunity. Jobs, farm work, better weather, because if they're going to be out and homeless and poor, maybe they just want to be in a place where it's a little nicer to live. And so people are moving around more now than ever. And the balance this summer was incredibly shifted. The rich tourists were way down. The tourism was way off. Everybody agrees, I think, by almost two-thirds from last year alone, a drop in tourism. Businesses are closing at an unprecedented rate.
Which businesses have closed recently?
I can't name them individually. None of them are ones that I ever shopped at. But I noticed even businesses that, like I went up the other day up on Mission Street, I couldn't believe the Kentucky Fried Chicken closed.
Yeah, it was about 2 weeks, 2 months ago, three months.
How the hell does a Kentucky Fried Chicken go out of business? You know what I mean? I mean, the stuff is delicious. I would give anything for a bucket full of Kentucky Fried Chicken right now. So, and at the same time that that's going down and the revenues in town are going down, there's a spike in people coming through town, traveling through town, or, you know, traveling to here to sort of check it out. And so, again, going back to the original question of this necessity defense, it doesn't take into account these people. So you're going to get woken up, and if you just arrived in town, you're going to get a ticket. Why? Just because you didn't know to go sign up the minute you got here on some sort of a list, and so you get a ticket. And that's unequal protection. I mean, it goes to the whole, and I can tell why this slips by everybody's radar. It's the whole Santa Cruz local thing that they've got going here. It's the only town in America where I get asked constantly by strangers how long I've lived here. Like that's some sort of badge of honor or something like that. And this whole idea that Santa Cruz is like some sort of separate country or something like that. And
it's not a town agitator, boy, and we know you're kind. We don't want you.
Well, I've been called a carpetbagger even in my own hometown. And so I don't got a problem with people pinning labels on me, but my problem with the attitude is that it treats people who come from out of town as some sort of an outsider. This is the United States of America. We don't have borders here. We can travel from...
And we're going to interrupt this this actually five-day-old discussion with Kerbugger Chris, who's actually in the studio, because on the line with us is that man about porta-potties, courts, and homeless people, not to mention justice, Ed Fry. Hey there, Ed.
Hey. Good evening, Ed. How are you?
We had our hearing in Robert Fasher's case, where he was charged and convicted of sleeping on the beach. And we had a three-judge panel in Superior Court, Santa Cruz today, and they unanimously rejected the appeal, saying that the right to sleep does not come within any constitutional constraints. Well, they're satisfied that it does. They said, I brought arguments in later, but you know, there's a doctrine that allows you to bring in constitutional issues at any point in the proceedings in the discretion of the court. So if they'd wanted to hear it, they would have heard it. So anyway, justice is denied once again. First it was delayed, now it's officially denied. So we're going back to the courthouse because that's the place that has the power to interpret and apply the Constitution. And someday, some judge somewhere, either here or in San Jose in federal court, is going to decide that, yes, sleep is a fundamental right. It's one of those unenumerated rights in the Ninth Amendment refers to, when they say that the enumeration of certain rights in the Constitution shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people.
So, Ed, I just want to be absolutely crystal clear on what you're saying, because we're here, and Steve was actually saying he's got tingles going up the back of his neck here. You are officially announcing that Peace Camp 2010 has moved from City Hall to the county courthouse, yes or no?
Yes, absolutely. That's what we're... That's why my long diatribe there about the court is the place where...
Well, all that was well taken, Ed. There's no question about it.
Where your constitutional rights reside and can be decided upon. So, yeah, that's where we're going, back to the courthouse, and we're going to have a good time. And we're going to leave by 8 a.m. and leave it absolutely clean. We're not going to hang out during the day. This is a night protest, 8 p.m. to 8 a.m., just as initially conceived on July the 4th. And there's not going to be any hanging out during the day.
Ed, can I ask you a question?
Except as needed.
Since you're just making this move, are you anticipating any reaction tonight?
A reaction tonight? I don't know. I was able to see Don Lane along the street, and I told him, Some of the judges, I think two out of the three judges who decided the case against us, walked past the porta potty and it was parked there already.
Was Paul Burdick among them?
Say what?
Was Paul Burdick among those judges?
Yes.
Yeah, the three judges were Maragonda, Burdick, and Ariadne Simons.
Judge Simons, and she saw it too. So,
did any of them deign to use the porta potty and commend you on your sanitational concerns?
If they did, I didn't notice. But I don't think so.
Well, you heard it first here on Free Radio Santa Cruz and Unbroken Chain Internet Radio, folks. Peace Camp 2010 has moved from City Hall to back to the county courthouse.
So, Ed, you're actually now defending how many people from Peace Camp 2010 who've gotten lodging tickets?
So far, about five, including myself.
Aha. But isn't it true that you have a fool for a client or an idiot for an attorney or something?
Just a moment. Hang on.
Yeah. Hope I haven't driven away with that.
Well, let's hope that's not the sheriff there.
Incautious.
That's Lieutenant Plageman already down there going, oh, no, no way. Get that thing out of here.
The audible click of the handcuffs on the telephone line. What's happening there, Ed?
They thought that the porta potty was locked.
What's that?
Huh?
Sorry, what's going on?
Oh, there was a demand to use the porta potty. They thought it was locked, but it wasn't. It was open already. Unlocked.
Now, is the porta potty going to be available for the entire citizenry? Because now you're going to supply the entire county with an open bathroom, or just for peace camp people, or
one of the only ones. So, if anybody's in the vicinity and is desperate for a need to, relieve himself or herself, then sure, come on by.
That's very egalitarian of you, Ed.
Thank you.
So, how can people get more news or more information about this? I guess go to peacecamp2010.blogspot.com, or what's the best thing to do?
Go to edfryindependentforcongress.org. That'll give you the concept of full spectrum democracy.
Shameless self promotion, Ed.
That's right. I might even run for Congress as a write-in, just because I think that we need to talk about the quality of our representation in Congress. It's really important. And also because we need to start a national conversation between citizens and office holders on a regular, ongoing, institutionalized basis. Every 30 days, the president steps forward across the table from a citizen or that citizen's appointed proxy for a 30-minute conversation. Sound bites won't work. Follow-up questions will be permitted, in fact, encouraged. And all of us, as a citizenry, who listen and participate, we'll have our political economic education enhanced multifold.
Raise the level of public debate, Ed.
Yeah, public debate.
All right. Well, so if people want to join you tonight, you will be out there sleeping overnight at Peace Camp 2010, or you'll just be the overseer of the porta potty in the morning. What's going to happen?
I'll be here sleeping tonight.
All right. Well, I wish you well, and we'll look in on you and see what's up.
All right. Thanks for calling.
No problem.
Thank you, Ed.
Bye bye.
All right.
Wow.
Well, gentlemen, looks like the circle is now unbroken, or it's back again. Peace camp.
This is a drama that just knows no limits. It really is, and I think it's refreshing. I got to agree with Steve. This whole debate has gotten kind of stale, and cynics like yourself are classic symptoms of that staleness, I think. And,
there you go.
And, I think this has just been a really refreshing summer. This is something new and something different, and it's caught everybody by surprise, and it continues to surprise, I think, everyone. So, fantastic. I think it's good news.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Robert? Do tell. I mean, I know you're a man who always has an opinion, so.
Well, I don't know. I have to let this latest
sink in.
Sink in. I mean,
percolate a bit before
as I was saying.
You're just mad because you weren't consulted again.
Well, and actually, I am, as some insist, the leader of everything in Santa Cruz homeless.
Contrary to popular evidence.
Contrary to every bit of evidence, actually. Yeah. I'm just an occasional commentator. And, person with a point of view.
I've taken that role myself, so, I guess we're going to both sort of sit back and see what happens.
Point of view. It's hard to say. It really depends on the support that's mustered and the organization that people have and the legal, backing they have and the food backing and the financial backing. And I know that a week ago, Chris, you and I were talking about how it looked like the camp was
There were some hardcore people who were still fighting, but generally speaking, it was a small number of people, and they were getting a lot of harassment. They had court cases coming up. There was very limited legal and financial involvement. So it looked...
Well, I feel like I got some advice in hindsight to offer, and the only thing I would say to Peace Camp 2010, if they're out there listening, and I hope they are, and to anybody else who wants to help Peace Camp 2010, and that is to pay attention to the details on the ground. People that do this are foot soldiers. They need to eat. They need to have blankets. They need to have the basic. If you can't physically survive the occupation, you will not continue to occupy. You'll move on. You'll go do what you got to do. So help them to do that. Help them to survive by bringing them food, bringing them hot beverages. It's going to start getting cold. Make sure they have bed rolls. These are all things that are very inexpensive, very easy to do. And I think the community as a whole, if it supports Peace Camp 2010 this time around, needs to be as generous or more generous than they were the first time around, and keep that in mind.
Well, I know you were expressing concern that people have to be aware, homeless people particularly, who might have been willing and able to be a part of Peace Camp 2010 when it was at the courthouse before, and when the sheriffs and the authorities generally were looking the other way.
Stumped, I think.
Or stumped until they began issuing tickets on a nightly basis, misdemeanor lodging tickets. That you were concerned that and then in those days, you know, there was a warmer middle of the summer, no rain, pleasant climate, whereas now the weather may be beginning to turn, the rains may be coming. You were concerned that homeless people have to, perhaps with tents that you saw, for example, you talked about showing up at San Lorenzo Park. You know, have to be concerned with some protective stuff that it's not going to be so easy if that's taken away by the police or by the sheriffs. And of course, I guess it should be easier to claim than twice a week at the police station, unless the sheriffs suddenly develop more restrictive policies as well. You know,
I still say it should be on their radar. It should be on everybody's radar that's homeless. I know it's on my radar. I'm homeless.
And what should be on the radar?
The idea that the rains will come. It will get chilly. It will get, you know, it's not Maine where I come from, but it's winter. And so it's got to be dealt with. And if you're homeless, I think it should be on your radar this time of year. I think that should be enough said. Everybody can make their own judgment. I mean, you can also survive at peace camp. There are awnings, there are overhangs to sleep under, there are ways to put up tents and tarps. Sure, all that can be done, but just, I don't know. I mean, I was also concerned that up at the city hall, they basically have anti-terrorist tactics being deployed against them by...
I would call them terrorist tactics against them.
You know, by our armed constabulary.
Against people with legitimate political protests.
Right, and in the midst of all that, you know, I just think... But I have, unlike yourself, I have a lot more faith in the county sheriffs to at least handle themselves in a decent and professional manner, and I'll get arrested every night by the county sheriffs. I'm sorry, I've done it already twice, or three times, I'm sorry, and I'll do it again.
Are you saying you intend to go back to Peace Camp 2010?
I'm seriously considering. I, like you, have to let this absorb. I mean, I think it's a huge announcement, both personally and politically and journalistically, it has deep meaning. So,
and Steve, you have some thoughts?
Yeah, my comment would be that what impressed me most about Peace Camp 2010 initially was how well it was provisioned, how much outreach was available, how much awareness it raised, and I think if they can somehow meet those levels of provision, awareness, and outreach that they established to begin with, I think it can be a very good thing, but I think that's absolutely necessary. If you just triple over there in twos and threes and they're just a few people and nobody's really paying attention to it and they're ticketing people and they get frustrated and the people who are there willing to make that sacrifice decide, well, geez, it's not worth it because they don't see it as a communal effort, as some kind of a successful, potentially successful effort to raise awareness about the issue, then I don't see it succeeding. But if it can rise to the levels that it did initially, which I was very impressed with in terms of provision, outreach, and awareness. There was information there. There were people there. It was a terrific protest, a tremendous...
And you can actually see some of this on YouTube. I mean, you can really get a picture at the heart of it because I took a lot of videos, over 50 videos, right in that
part of it. And how can
people
access those videos?
They would go to peacecamp2010.blogspot.com. Right there on the top right-hand corner, you'll see all the links to our various channels, and one of them is YouTube. And I took very great advantage of YouTube during the thick of it. We got over 100 videos up altogether. About half of them deal with the arrests and arrests, and the the other half deal with just the good times that we had. The meal, that huge giant meal that the people traveled with a trailer and put up a full kitchen there right on the steps of the courthouse and served us pancakes, scrambled eggs, and bacon and coffee and all that sort of crap right there as the judges were walking in to go start their day. And,
I mean, without being schmaltzy about it, when I went over there a few times early, it had that kind of we shall overcome atmosphere of, you know, candles being lit and people actually walking around talking about the issue and being willing to reach out to people who came to say, well, this is what we're doing, this is what we're intending to do, this is what we feel is wrong, this is the wrong we're attempting to write. That kind of thing is very important, you know.
I mean, even stuff like the sign and the flag had great symbolic meaning. The moving of the flag every morning was the symbol that we were obeying the negotiated rules. We would move from the steps down onto move the office or whatever we called it, the headquarters, down into the Fort Peace area, which was the legitimized area where they said we could be during the day. And so that, you know, and then the big old sign, that big giant cardboard sign we had that said Peace Camp 2010 on it, that was our banner. I mean, hell, we marched with little Colette Conway behind it all the way to City Hall with that as our banner. I mean, there's some great pictures up at Sentinel, on the Sentinel website, of us doing that march.
So it's peacecamp2010.blogspot.com for perhaps what may be breaking news, or indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, or just wander on down to the county building at 701 Ocean Street between, I guess, 8 in the evening and 8 in the morning. Yeah. That was another disadvantage, by the way, that I saw to both the Peace Camp and the problem at the city, whether it was City Hall or when it was at the county building, is that you want to have outreach to people who are going by, who are a different set of people, particularly people impacted by the sleeping ban or who might be sympathetic to changing it. And I think that after a while at the courthouse, though some people are interested, and who knows, may again be interested, and hopefully they will be, most people you're going to find are going to be at other places, shopping centers, downtown on Pacific Avenue during the day.
Well, I
movie
that
theaters
was for myself, that one of the reasons I focus so heavily on the media, because that brings it to their homes, so that at night when they get home from the shopping malls and everything, we're still in their face.
You focused on the media, but you it's not all just about you and your work on the media, although it was wonderful that you did that work. The Peace Camp itself was in a location which was not particularly good for, you know, people passing by.
I just don't like it when people disagree. I mean, I disagree with that. Think it was perfect. So,
well,
I mean, the most powerful people in the world walk by us every day.
One thing they did do early, and I noticed being downtown, was that Chris was downtown, some other folks were downtown, saying, well, this demonstration, this protest, this peace camp is going on over here, and why don't you go over here and check it out? You give somebody, you know, that's what was happening that I thought was effective to kind of...
Right, but there wasn't that much of that. More,
and I'm advocating that there'd be more.
Yeah, and I think that, you know,
to get 60 people sleeping there every night for, you know, a good week. I mean, what more do you want?
Right.
How much outreach?
That's nice.
Try to get more.
But you know, the issue became, Chris, you know, we knew they were going to come after it at one point or another. What do you do when that happens? And that was something you did not want to talk about because you felt it would lower morale.
We did exactly what we did.
Well,
you
didn't
want to
get arrested. And you didn't want to plan for it.
You didn't have to plan for it. You stand up and do it.
I understand. Yeah. But you didn't want to get into that. And the same problem has happened at Peace Camp, you know, over at City Hall, which is that people do not have really an alternative plan. Like, for example, Dignity Village in Portland, they moved to another park immediately. They had a big shindig with shopping carts.
Seems to me that tonight actually contradicts your argument, Robert. They
have
a plan. They're making a plan. They're doing what they want to do. They moved to City Hall.
No, it happened only because Ed lost this thing at this particular court.
I guarantee you they had a meeting and agreed to it. Ed is not a dictator. Ed had a meeting with them, and they all decided to go.
I'm sure he did, and I'm sure that probably happened among the few.
Seems to me that
among
they're doing,
the few people,
you got a plan.
Among the few
you just
people,
don't like it.
Among the few people who are there, know that for a month and a half they stayed at City Hall, and I don't think that was particularly good location after the first few weeks. That was just my impression because it's too isolated. The city council was
they
on
felt
vacation.
Otherwise, obviously.
You felt otherwise.
I wasn't there.
You
Robert.
Felt otherwise.
I quit.
Excuse me, Chris. You
can't
moved.
Blame it on
excuse
me.
Me, Chris. You moved the camp to City Hall almost unilaterally. You made a decision and you went over to City Hall, which isn't necessarily a bad decision.
Everybody followed me, so that was their vote.
That's
Robert.
Right. They followed you.
That
it
was
all
that
a matter.
Was their
wait
vote,
a minute.
Robert.
It was all a matter of one person making a choice and
they
everybody
voted.
Else trailing along after. And that can work in some situations.
They voted
but,
with their feet, Robert.
But that's fine. It can work in some situations. In other situations, it doesn't work so well.
It did.
That's all.
I bet you right now
and
they
I
all followed,
you know,
Ed with their feet, man.
Well, see how many. I hope a lot of people do follow him with their feet.
But the point
everybody
is
that matters.
The number of people at peace camp is not the measure of the effectiveness of the demonstration. The number of people that you influence and raise awareness about the issue is the measure of the effectiveness.
Both are, I think. Yeah. But I think your point is well taken, but they're both important.
Yeah, of course.
Perhaps we have someone who can enlighten all of us as to what they think.
I bet it's peace camp calling.
Hey there. You're on free radio.
Sounding combative up there. So you should call a truce among your...
No chance. We're having too much fun fighting.
Distinguished panel of argument.
Yes. What do you
hey,
have to say
there?
We're
doing good radio, lady.
Hey,
who are you?
We know who this woman
I
is.
Know
and
who
we
she is.
Know her kind.
I can't wait to hear my voice. So I'm going to hang up. Bye.
Oh.
She can catch the stream.
I think she found it disconcerting that we disagree. And I don't know.
We
even,
disagree
I don't
a lot.
Even,
people
I don't
know
even,
me and Robert.
Yeah, I don't
we
even know that we really disagree. I mean, this is one has to consider the situation and think about it. I think that, you know, that there are different strategies, any of which can be effective, depending.
Tactics
you know.
Are always an issue upon which reasonable minds are going to differ. That's just the way it
sure,
is. Some people
sure.
look at it in a different way. I think we're all hoping for the same result.
Yeah.
No question about that. We're all
for sure.
I think I'm
that.
More comfortable sitting in the same seat that Robert's in now, where we're basically debating something that's neither one of our decision anymore. And I want to make that clear. And ultimately, I think Robert will agree with this. We're all going to back Peace Camp 2010 and their decision, and that's what they've indicated tonight is their decision. So I think we can argue about whether it's going to be effective or not, but in the end, we're going to be down there with donuts and coffee and pizza and all that. And,
well,
and I think everybody that's listening ought to keep that in mind.
Steve is going to
be
bringing the pizza.
I personally am backing a Peace Camp 2010 because they're the only group that's endorsing my candidacy.
There you go. That's folks.
I was responsible for that decision.
So you're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. Before.
And Unbroken Chain Internet Radio, ucir.limewebs.com.
To say the least. There was an interesting article that came over the Huff, actually, came over a group called Rad Times. It's an article, When Cameras Are Outlawed, Only Outlaws Will Have Cameras, by Mark Nestman, September 15, 2010. Maybe you guys want to comment on this. If you witness police misconduct and record it as a video on your phone or camera, you won't be welcomed as a hero. In several U.S. states, you could be subject to a long prison sentence. In recent years, dozens of videos documenting police misconduct have been posted on YouTube, but prosecutors haven't generally punished the offending cops. Increasingly, they're arresting the individuals who posted the videos. The charge, illegal wiretapping. Yes, wiretapping. What the NSA does with impunity and without a warrant is illegal for us to do when we witness police abuse. At least two states, Massachusetts and Illinois, made it illegal to record any on-duty police officer in any situation. It doesn't matter if the officer is in the process of beating someone to death. It doesn't matter if the recording is in your own home and the police have just busted down your door in an illegal search. If you record the interaction, you can go to prison. In 10 other states, all parties
never stand.
In 10 other states, all parties must consent in order for a private person to make a recording of a conversation or personal encounter. Since a police officer acting abusively isn't likely to give you permission to record the event, if you do so, you could be violating the wiretap statute and be subject to a long prison sentence. In Illinois, for instance, a street artist recorded his own arrest for selling artwork without a peddler's license. He now faces up to 15 years in prison. Arresting police whistleblowers is a nationwide trend, and the courts approve. For instance, the Massachusetts Supreme Court upheld the conviction of a man arrested for recording a police encounter. Defendant Michael Hyde used the recording to file a harassment complaint against police. Instead, he was convicted of illegal wiretapping. While he was sentenced to only 6 months of probation, he could have faced a much longer prison term. Cameras, in effect, are like guns. Point a gun at a police officer and you'll be arrested. Point a camera at a police officer and you'll be charged and likely convicted of illegal wiretapping. The fact that wiretapping laws are being used against private citizens is richly ironic because they were enacted to protect citizens against government oppression. These cases turn that notion on its head because those trying to protect themselves or others from official misconduct end up being prosecuted. Since we're living in a surveillance society where the government continuously monitors our finances, our communications, and our movements, shouldn't we have the right to turn the tables and, in effect, watch the watchers? Yes, but the police and the courts disagree. And that's an article from www.lourockwell.com and by Mark Nestman. When cameras are outlawed, only outlaws will have cameras. Any comments, folks?
Quis custodiet est custodi, which is Latin for who watches the watchmen.
Who watches the watchmen.
I think it's outrageous. I guess you contradicted my argument that it won't stand in court because it is standing in court. But, I mean, it's outrageous. I mean, I'm certainly cannot imagine that going down in Santa Cruz.
No, I'm wondering what the application, the extension of that might be. I know that a lot of community groups, Take Back Santa Cruz and the like, will go out with their video cameras and they will video snap pictures of kids putting graffiti on walls or what they think is suspicious activity and that kind of thing. And that just by that act, they think that they're suppressing that crime or that activity. So I don't know whether that's actionable from them doing that.
Well, I know that in Santa Cruz, as you probably noticed, maybe you didn't see, but I think you probably did, Chris, when if you've been to the police department trying, you were with me. We went to get our property. There is a sign that says, you know, you can't record anything in here. And indeed, when I attempted to audio record, they didn't arrest me. They just wouldn't serve me. They told me your public records are ready. I came in and I had the recorder on and I had it open because I didn't want to try to fool anybody. And
they actually played that video a couple of weeks ago, and it was just outrageous. It was like it sounded like a mob scene. It sounded like a fist fight or a riot.
What sounded like a mob scene?
The scene where you guys went down to get your property, and you guys were told by the property lady you had to all shut off the recorders.
Right, and actually, to his credit, the Sentinel reporter still took photographs, and
yeah.
It was still appeared in the paper
said.
The next
day.
Yeah,
we reported on that.
And I recorded, but I have been blocked from getting public records at the police department if I want to record it as I go. And you pointed out, Chris, well, if I pick your battles, what are you going to do? Record it? Are you going to get the records? Are you going to get the property? What are you going to do?
That is a tough call.
It's always a tough call. But, you know, it is true in Santa Cruz, just as the public spaces are getting constricted, the library, at the city hall, mm-hmm. police station, and not just the police station, the grounds of the police station at night are now illegal to be on. In a very recent decision, they posted some signs, I think illegally, because they didn't go through the process which the statute itself requires, the law that they passed. The Parks and Rec Commission has to be consulted.
Well, I think it's outrageous, just responding to this situation you described, that you would have to, if you wanted to reclaim your property or get public records or record it, that you would have to pick two items off the menu, that you couldn't have everything to which you're entitled.
Right,
to record.
Right.
It just seems outrageous to me.
Right, and actually when...
Welcome to Santa Cruz.
They have attempted to intimidate people, they didn't do it by law. When we went to get public records for sleeping ban citations in court from the windows of the court, when they used to have windows in the basement where you would go to get your infraction tickets dealt with, we walked up to the windows and we made up public records. We wanted to see the records of sleeping ban tickets for a certain period of mm-hmm. time. And they said, we won't give them to you, you know, or we only give you your records. We won't tell you other people's stuff. And this is a public record. You know, we have a right to see who was arrested when, around what issues. This is the court convictions and trials of sleeping ban tickets.
Is that a Freedom of Information Act?
It's a Public Records Act. It's state
okay.
information. Freedom of Information is, I think, federal.
It's federal, it is.
You know, but
what happened was
we actually have a discussion online of this. If you look this up in 2006, 2007, we had Becky Johnson who was videoing us as we started doing this,
mm-hmm.
and they brought out six deputies. Because the woman at the window said we were causing a disturbance. And we said, we're not causing a disturbance. It's the same thing, of course, I faced in city council with this mock Nazi salute. You're causing a disturbance.
Famous, yeah.
You know, we're simply trying to get the records that we have a right to get. We aren't shouting. We aren't screaming. Perhaps we should be. Maybe that's more appropriate. Maybe that would draw more attention. But we're
Might
just standing in line. We're standing in line waiting for it. Deputy, you'll have to leave. And I said, no, you'll have to arrest us if you want us to leave. And then we can deal with that, whatever comes up in court. And they backed down. But they... Now what they're doing, instead of intimidating people with the threat of arrest, they're passing new laws that give legal cover for a whole series of arrests and tickets like happened to Peace Camp 2010 activists last night
mm-hmm.
for lying down on the sidewalk or for sleeping at night or for being in a forbidden zone. Suddenly we have a whole new series of laws that are being created specifically to cut short protests.
One particular protest which kills me. I mean, it's like they've gone to so much money over this one thing. What is the likelihood that this will ever happen in this town again?
Well, I think any continuing protest would face this kind of repression by a city in this kind of political climate. I think they are concerned. They have developed this kind of I don't know, we call it megalomania or hypersensitivity to criticism or 9/11 trauma. I don't know, whatever it is.
These aren't new ordinances. They're simply the old ordinances that are being selectively enforced. Is that what's happening?
Well, they're,
that's a slew of things. It's a bunch of different strategies.
Well, they are. There are a couple of new ordinances that concern, you know, three infractions making a misdemeanor, but that hasn't been used yet much that I've seen.
But the ordinances to which you're referring,
they're using old ordinances to create unprecedentedly broad no-go zones.
Okay.
That has not happened yet, that hasn't happened before in Santa Cruz history.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess it happened, they did it with the Poganiff, they did it with the parks, they did it with the levee. And it's not just outrage in those of us who are protesting, but it's also outraged ordinary people. I talked to Joe Schultz, the restaurant manager downtown, who admittedly is sympathetic to our protest. But he doesn't like the idea that he can't walk along the levee without getting hassled by the police if it's after dark. You know, I mean, what are we, seven-year-olds that we have to be in after dark, you know, for our own protection? You know, this notion that everything, we all have to be protected by massive police presence, or we have to put the little cop inside our heads and act as though we are watching ourselves all the time so we don't violate these bullshit laws, it's not just an intrusion of privacy, it's a deformation of the character of the people in Santa Cruz. It tries to encourage you to become a subservient kind of individual who internalizes the police officers that they don't have the money to put on the streets. That's how it looks to me. We only have about 9 minutes left in the show, and I was going to do all kinds of things and play all kinds of tapes. I'll try to be back on Sunday, 8:30 in the morning, with the Byers, Councilmember Byers interview, which, for the main part, is mostly interesting in how she avoids committing herself on, or actually acknowledges, she supports all the anti-homeless stuff that she voted for in the last 3 years. And she asked maybe to reconsider it. She says, oh, you know, it's really too bad, but no, I won't.
Who is characterizing that as buyer's remorse?
That was Becky Johnson's description of what she did. We have buyer's remorse because we voted for this woman in 1998. Actually, in 1996.
I just thought that was very clever.
Actually, she wasn't bad in 1996. She changed when she got power. That was the problem with buyers. And I think that's the problem with a lot of people. They change.
You think I'll change when I'm in power?
I don't think you'll get into power.
I think he's been pretty fucking clear about it. He's a dickhead, but he's been pretty fucking clear about it. I would keep a close eye on you
if you did, because it's dangerous, because you have connections with people, you're concerned about their opinions, and I've seen it happen to almost, there are a few people who don't, but it's very rare.
I would like to think that I am immune to the blandishments of power,
right.
You know, but I don't know that anyone is, really. I mean, I can feel it even as a candidate for city council. You have a feeling of empowerment. You have a feeling of a privilege of some kind. It's silly, but it's something that kind of creeps in, and all of a sudden, you know, there you are. I've tried very, very diligently to guard against that, you know, to be true to my roots, to be true to what I believe in, and to be able to keep the faith of my convictions as I go through this thing.
Well, I think the way to do that is to stay in close touch with those who aren't in power, and also to have an alternate power base, that is to say, renters unions, homeless unions, unions of oppressed workers, in-home care workers, mm-hmm. people that are elders, groups of elders are getting fucked over. So if you not so much to pay attention to the established liberal groups, the Democrats and the Republicans and even the ACLU, don't go to the people instead who are actively involved in really engaging in protest activity and monitoring of city officials.
Peace Camp 2010, for instance.
I would say that's a good group to consider.
Yeah.
Wing nutty as they may be.
As they may be. But unfortunately, I mean, for what I've seen,
look who's calling.
I don't know whether,
there
are any ex officio renters organizations or labor organizations or oppressed people's organizations that you could really get in contact
gonna come
with
back.
And say who are outside of outside of the status quo, outside of the official government. And say, well, what do you think? You know, how do I?
Well, I think that the same issues that produce these organizations are there.
Of course,
and therefore, you know, and it's always tempting to think, oh well, let's go find the organization and they'll deal with it. But often it's not the organization you need to go to. Is you have to raise the issue and see who who's writing about it, who's speaking about it, who cares about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you could find that maybe in stranger places. I mean, there was a lot of hostility to the city council's rental inspection ordinance.
Of
I was
going
to ask
yeah.
a couple of the questions about that issue to Don Lane today, but I never got to it. I think Lane is...
Your opinion of Wayne, you made pretty damn clear during the interview.
I think he's a. I mean, yeah, I think he tends to yeah. be. He, you know, nothing.
I think he got it.
Yeah. I don't care whether he gets it or not. I think we have to understand that nothing seems to faze him in terms of, you know, he's got
he's a rocking clone. He's got a smile for everything.
It's all sort of okie dokie.
He is a Mike rocking clone.
Yeah. I don't know. He is just as greasy and everything. I don't know if I call him a Mike Rodkin clone because I think Rodkin's different in other respects. But I think that
the problem I have with Don
is that Don is a guy who has put a lot of he's claimed to have a lot of interest in homeless issues over the last 25 years. I've seen him. He owned the Saturn Cafe for a while, and he owned the yogurt business downtown for a while. Mm-hmm. He was on the Homeless Service Center board for a while. But I've seen him colluding endlessly with people who have no respect at all
Chip.
For homeless civil rights. And I don't mean people as ineffectual and limited as Chip. I mean, you know, the city manager. I'm talking about the... I don't even know if the city manager has any respect for Don or has any interest in Don. But Don used to hang out a lot with Scott Kennedy when he was involved.
Huh. Uh-huh.
And Kennedy was very two-faced on these issues. He started out very good. You know, he started out, at least what I thought was good. I always try to be, you know, believe it or not, give people a fair opportunity because they're new, you know.
That was when you were...
That was when I was a young boy.
He had all black hair.
Not a young sprout.
He had all...
It was never all black.
Well,
it was dark brown.
Yeah.
But that's another story.
It was no white.
Santa Claus.
No, we got a bunch of whiteies
as
here.
As long as you're kind of...
Anyway,
profiling some of the past leaders in Santa Cruz, I met Tim Fitzmaurice at the GOBT.
Ah, yes. We didn't call him, was it Tenderfoot Tim, or I'm not sure, it was a...
Bathrobe was less threadbare, too.
Fitzmaurice was the guy who banned us all from City Hall for 6 months.
Is that right?
That's correct. We call it the Coffee Clatch 3. It's a lot of publicity around that. We were serving coffee... And when he became mayor, right outside his office, inviting homeless people to come in and tell him that there was no shelter that winter, really. And
mm-hmm.
would he suspend put the sleeping ban on the agenda? Because he had 5 votes if he wanted to lead a campaign to suspend the sleeping ban.
Right?
Yeah, there was Crone, Sugar, Fitzmaurice, Riley, Porter, and him.
Uh-huh.
And Fitzmaurice. So he could have been done, but, you know... That was an issue that they were not interested in at that point. And so he got tired of having us come in there with our homeless people. So he tried to claim we were being disruptive. So we started tape recording everything to show that we were not being disruptive. So he put up signs that banned us from tape recording. And that's where the decorum rules that are in the police station came from.
Fitzmaurice
created those rules for all the city offices so that no one could tape record any city officials anymore, according to his edict. Now, I've never followed that edict.
Is that what they call Robert's Rules of Order?
I would call it... I have other rules, and I don't wish to discuss them at this time.
I'll bet you don't.
It looks like, you know, I think Uncle Dennis should probably be knocking on the door shortly. Coming up next is From the Cream to the Dregs, and that's a welcome change.
It's going to be one of the coolest shows in Free Radio Santa Cruz. The whole show is about a beer and
blather.
Music.
So I'm going to thank everybody for being a part of this. I'm going to, or if you were, maybe if you're just listening in, if you want to get in touch with me between times, if you want to support Peace Camp 2010, I don't think that Peace Camp 2010 number really is too operational
right
now.
I don't want to worry about the phone number. Just go to the website, and there's a bunch of other ways that you can support them. I'm sure you'll get a hold of somebody.
Ways you
or
can
just go down
them.
To the courthouse.
And you can also give a call to the Huff line if you want to get in touch with me. I'm not in any way a representative of Peace Camp 2010. I don't speak for them. I speak about them. And sometimes I'm not entirely favorable. You know me. I've got critical opinions, too. But my name is Robert. My phone number is 423-4833. Feel free to give me a call if you've got comments about the show. I want to remind you also that on Sunday, Pebbles Trippett will be back talking about part 3 of the myths around Proposition 19. Should this measure, which is a measure to legalize marijuana further and criminalize it also in some respects, should it be passed in November? And we're going to have that discussion with Pebbles Trippett of the Medical Marijuana Union of Patients Union up in Mendocino.
And you are also listening to Unbroken Chain Internet Radio. This show airs on my own station, and you can check that out at ucir.limewebs.com. Thanks for having me, Robert.
Oh, no problem, man. Thanks for being here. Let's hear a little bit more of O Christmas Bush, an ancient pseudo-centaur.
I love this CD.
I'm glad you like
it. God bless you, Robert.
Hey, thank you, Chris. And thank you, Steve.
Frosty, the chairman, read the company report.
It was quite a year, but it does appear that our profits came up short.
It soon was clear then, with some input from his staff.
As the CEO, I could save some dough if I slash all jobs in half.
There must have been some magic in the plan that they devised. For when the numbers all were crunched, they began to scream, downside! Frosty, the chairman, was as pleased as he could be.
If our stocks get hot, I could buy a yacht and retire by 43.
Frosty, the chairman, said the profit still did lag. And so once again, he called his staff in to pull more tricks from their bag. They had a new plan that he launched without remorse.
Workers soon will flip when they get pink slips saying your job's been outsourced.
He shut down the old factory.
I really have no choice. We need to cut more spending, plus I could use a new Rolls Royce.
Frosty, the chairman, he got fired the next day. Since his pay's too high, they will now get by
with the snowman from Bombay.
Better watch out, I'm telling you why. The FAA doubts that Santa will fly. Santa Claus is coming by ground. His bags were too weird. They're posting his bonds. They're checking his beard. He's getting the wand. Santa isn't leaving the ground. He'd take a flight if he could. They thought his suit looked weird. They profiled him as bad, not good, just because of his long beard. They'll post a reward, 'cause last time he flew, he tried to board his sleigh with shampoo. TSA does not like his ilk. He might bring on some cookies and milk.
And now a word from Academy Award winner Mel Gibson.
I blamed the Jews, but I assure you, it's just not a true, except for World War II. Accusations of hate have in fact made me think. Now Mokin David is all that I will drink, 'cause when the booze male drink starts flowing, oh, that's when my true colors start showing. Just to prove it's all right, and to show I'm contrite, I'll wish all of the Jews Merry Christmas. I won't blame the Jews, that much is certain. But when my new blockbuster is hurting, all my movies will play to big crowds on one day. Al Jazeera will show them on Christmas.
Happy holidays, ladies and gentlemen. We are members of the United States House of Reprehensibles.
Here we come a-waffling on promises we made, 'cause our minds keep changing, now please don't feel betrayed.
I'll give health care to you,
your domestic partner too,
and the tax cut for dogs. truck, we can't forget the rich.
I am firmly for a plan, just don't know which.
Personally, I feel it's a little early for Christmas songs, Robert, so I'm going to cancel those. Anyway, Robert will be back on Sunday morning, somewhere around 9:30 or so, to make sure that you all are properly informed about the issues of the homeless in Santa Cruz. And you might even want to do something about it. I don't know. I'm here to play music.